It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy Anatko's here. Alex Lindsay's here. And just returned from the Apple Park campus, Micah Sargent. Yes, we're going to take a look at the Apple event yesterday. In fact, go deep on the Vision Pro. I'm a little more skeptical than these guys are. We'll also talk about new iOS, new macOS, new tvOS, and watchOS, plus all new Mac hardware. It's a jam-packed episode next on Mac Break Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 873, recorded Tuesday, June 6th, 2023. Bubble Loverlay. This episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by ACI Learning. IT skills are outdated in about 18 months, so you should stay ahead of the curve and future-proof your business's competitiveness with customizable, entertaining training. Fill out the form at go.acilearning.com/twit for more information on a free 2-week trial for your team. And by ZipRecruiter. Did you know that hiring can take up to 11 weeks on average? Do you have that time to wait? Of course not. Stop waiting and start using ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter helps you find qualified candidates for all your roles fast. And right now, you could try it free at ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. And by Melissa. More than 10,000 clients worldwide rely on Melissa for full-spectrum data quality and ID verification software. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today with 1,000 records clean for free at melissa.com/twit. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest Apple news, and oh boy, is there Apple news. Alex Lindsay's here from officehours.global and 090.media. Hello, Alex. I think you're drooling.
Hello, hello.
I think his drool is showing.
A little excited.
Wipe your mouth.
It looks pretty good. I think we had over 100 people in there watching yesterday for a second year, and we were all, everyone was just tearing. There was half of us were like, half of the group was like, oh, it's never going to work and no one's ever going to buy that. And the other half was like, I can't wait. Where do I order? Where do I put my credit card down? So it was a split crew.
Mr. Andy Anatko, WGBH. Boston. He's got his Viewmaster.
Now, I'm under NDA, so there are some things I can't talk about. But as soon as like the
I can see his eyes. Yes, it's a little uncanny. Yeah,
exactly. You know, I've gone for the hellhound
sort
effect
of oddly
on that
placed.
Thing.
You can only see the whites of the eyes.
Yes.
And that
you tell me if I look like a dork in this, didn't you? Wouldn't you?
Yeah. No. Maybe. Jason Snell is on assignment. He's down on the tennis courts.
He's petting dinosaurs someplace.
Campus, petting dinosaurs. Indeed. But we're very pleased that Micah came home.
I did. I ran home.
Micah Sargent sitting in the chair. Good to see you. You were there yesterday.
I was there yesterday. I did want to say a nice gentleman, Oscar, says hello, Leo, and thank you for everything.
Oscar the Grouch.
I was in the elevator about to make my way back to the car, and this guy from across the elevator suddenly does a double take, I see, and he points at me, and then he goes, "Twit." That's all he said. "Twit." And I said, "Yes?" And he goes, forgive me. I said, "Micah." He goes, "Oh, Micah Sargent. Oh, where's Leo?" And I said,
something people of Apple have been asking for the last 22 years.
And then he was very kind and said that he and his kids watched all the shows. Nice. And they
Hi, Oscar.
Him, so. Hello,
it's great
Oscar.
To see you. I hope you're having fun down there at WWDC, the 2023 edition. Yeah, we covered the keynote. I did it because we had planned to do it with you, and then you got a last-minute invitation. But that gave me a great opportunity to bring people up onto the stage from the club.
How was that?
It was great. It was it was Kev Brewer. It was Joe Esposito and Joe from Brooklyn. It was the usuals. But it was really, I thought, quite fun. I thought they did a very good job. And what was interesting, I was talking with one of the producers afterwards, and he said, they knew the rhythm of how we do these keynotes, like when to talk.
Oh, really?
When not to talk. Yeah, it was true. They watched a few, I think.
That's cool.
So, if I were a smart, canny podcaster, I would save one more thing for the end.
Okay. As if it is one more thing.
As if it were one more thing, just like Tim Cook did. Uh huh. we were sitting here. I'm sure you were.
Oh yeah.
Saying, okay, you've gone an hour. You've gone an hour and a half. I think
it was getting long.
And actually, at one point, I was really wondering, maybe they're not going to introduce this.
We had that feeling too, sitting there, thought maybe it just wasn't time. Maybe something went wrong.
I mean, that would be really a big deal given how much publicity, but they never said they were going to introduce it.
Exactly.
You know, Bill, Tim's been saying AR, AR, AR for a while. So, you know, we know he was very interested in this.
And before the event started, there was a moment where both Craig Federighi and Tim Cook were on stage. And what gave me the hint that they were going to was right before the video that everybody else got to see from Out in the World saw, Tim Cook said something along the lines of, this is going to be an historic day. Uh-huh. I love that he used the "an historic day."
An historic day.
And yes. Then that's whenever the video started, the part that was streamed live elsewhere. And so I thought, okay, definitely at the end. But then it just kept going and going. And I'm looking over at Jason Snell, who's sitting next to me. And are they going? Yeah, they won more thinged.
When they won more thinged, they also won more thinged the price. And this was the reaction from the crowd.
Oh, I'm glad someone captured
Apple
that.
Vision Pro starts at $34.99. It will be available.
Folks, that is not a sound effect.
That was
that was the real sound in the audience.
That was so intense that I honestly had to reach out to a friend of mine who was there and say, did that really happen? He said, yes, it was. If anything, it was even louder.
We didn't hear it, of course, because Apple, once again, even in the absence of COVID, because you were all there, you were unmasked, you didn't get special Apple.
Yeah, there weren't tests this time.
Five fly masks, no tests. Yeah. They still decided to do it recorded. So tell me how it happened. You're sitting in the press, from what I could tell from your tweets and others, you were kind of in the back.
Yeah, so this time, because there were developers there, they got the front seats. Yeah. And then there was a small row of some of the blessed Apple employees who got to be there because their teams were kind of featured. And then right behind that row was the press. And so we were near the back, but it also was, it kind of gave the press the opportunity to be in the shade. So we were sort of comfortably sitting, although right where we were, it was with the sun. But anyway, you're sitting there and you're looking up at the stage and everything's getting ready. They're playing that music. You can see the huge screen. And what they did in the past and what they did again this year is Tim Cook took the stage and talked briefly. And he was saying,
he was wearing a light blue shirt. And I noticed that.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was a different shirt in the video.
Yes.
He did not attempt to match his outfit.
Yeah, there was no matching there. And, you know, they talked for a little bit. Craig said a few things and sort of joked about the presentation, and then it kicked off. There was no after with that. As soon as it was over, then we all kind of looked towards our press contacts. Our sort of PR people were off to the side and said, where do we go next? And then they shuffled us off from there.
Yeah. Alex, you were really, you said, I frankly was surprised because I completely disagree with you. You said that they're never going to do a live performance again, that this is, you know, so good. And I grant you, I mean, they got a lot of information into 2 hours and 6 minutes, but
they're never going to do a live event again.
Yeah. I think that's really a shame because I think you really, feel like you really lose.
So glad.
Well, yeah. You like to live in a bubble, I guess. I'd miss, because you don't go out much.
People keep on saying, I don't understand why the energy, you know, Google and Microsoft have lost so much energy in their events. It's not that they've lost energy. It's that Apple's is so much tighter with so much more data and so much more visual interest that when you go back to a stage, it's like going from the highway to a gravel, you know.
I think you could driveway. Do a hybrid where you had people. I want to see the executives. I want to see their energy and enthusiasm. I want to see, and we didn't see it, Tim Cook wearing a Vision Pro.
Yes.
And I think you could do that and introduce videos, because I understand it's a much more content rich way to present it and then much more clear. But I do think you lose something from not having people on stage. I really do. And I think Apple's at risk of becoming, they already kind of look like this. In fact, even building Apple Park with everything facing in, they already look like a company that doesn't participate with its, you know, they're in Elysian fields up there somewhere.
If Google and Microsoft are doing physical events in 3 years, I'll be really surprised. I think it's over.
Yeah.
Like the idea of the keynote is done. you know, it's you put a fork in it.
You know, like it's maybe, you know, if Steve Jobs were still here, there would be no question that you would want.
No, he's the one that brought it forward. You have to be, but you have to be Steve Jobs or Mark Benioff from Salesforce, by the way. I don't understand anything he talks about, but he's amazing at talking about it. Like his you know, and he's trained by Tony Robbins and just incredible, their entire staff. So if you're at that level and you're willing to spend 2 hours a week being trained, then I think that doing keynotes makes a lot of sense for you. But none of these executives are doing that. And all of it is just painful to watch. People who are untrained,
if they're not good at it.
Yeah. Scripting through things, reading teleprompters, even right. Apple. When Steve was gone, it was the magic was gone in that process because they're not actors. You know, Steve had something that they didn't have. Steve made the keynote a keynote because he was so good at it.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing is that was like, you know, that was a
I'd rather see a live rock show than a perfect canned performance. I'd rather see a Broadway show than a perfect
movie.
Sure,
but that those are incredible, generally incredible
people,
musicians that are very talented and spent thousands of hours getting good at it. The executives are not those people. It's more like watching a live show of someone who just learned how to play the guitar, you know, like 3 weeks ago. And that's not super exciting, you know, and that's what they look like. That's what executives look like when they go out on stage, is like a kid who just learned how to play the guitar and trying to play you Mary, Mary Had a Little Lamb. You know, it's really pain. I've watched literally thousands of sessions.
Okay.
So I think that's part of it.
But on the other hand, like, this isn't Las Vegas. This is really is engineers and product managers explaining this thing they've been working on for the past 7 years. It's okay if they don't land the triple jump off the trampoline. You know, I had to say that maybe the biggest like cognitive disconnect I had was like, wow, I'm seeing pictures of like an audience of people watching a video together on a screen.
Yeah.
Like I know that people didn't come, the people who traveled to go see it didn't go to see it to watch the video. It was because, okay, maybe there's going to be a demo area. And also I have the ability to talk to people afterward, but oh my goodness. If you were not like within 1 hour's travel time of that venue and you flew like 6 hours to again watch what was a very, very stilted, canned presentation with really very, it was, you're right. It was very professionally done. There were no trip ups. There was no stumbling. There was no like pauses as, oh, we thought that he would be able to cross from the right left stage to the center stage more quickly than that. But on the other hand, it was like watching a video game walkthrough in many ways. And it's okay because this is just a product demo. This is not supposed to be showbiz, but
all right. We don't have to go on and on. We only got a two hour show.
Let me just say one point about that is that as someone who's done a couple thousand of these, I can tell you that little, like, they just walk to the wrong part of the stage. That's like 2 weeks of meetings. And that's why a company, once they go into reports,
I understand. We don't look at enough. Enough.
Yeah. Right.
They're going to probably do it recorded from now on. I think there's something lost. Let's talk about the, I'm going to be grumpy today. You did not get to try it on, Micah Sargent.
I did not. The most that I got to do was walk into a room where there was this sort of center table and there were two headsets on poles.
This reminds me a lot of when the iPhone came out.
Yes.
You couldn't really go near it.
And you just see this animation playing on the front screen.
Is this your TikTok or is this somebody else's TikTok?
I guess it is. Yes.
Yeah. It's our TikTok. Here's your video from our Slack channel. Very, very crowded. How many of them did they have there?
They had, I believe, well, I guess it's double. So it was six around the table.
And I wonder, you know, they're doing these, there's a close up of it. They're doing these demos for people yesterday and today. I imagine because it's stretched out so far that there are a handful of them.
There are a handful of them, but what is important to understand is that much like the first iPhone, where if you push the wrong button, everything fell apart.
Yeah.
That is what we are seeing with these headsets. These headsets.
So people who are doing the demos are saying
highly
guided.
Yes.
There's another part to this, which I should mention, and I think this is a big problem for it, is you have to set it up. You have to have your face shot with the device, the Vision Pro, but also your ears scanned with your iPhone. You have to have your face scanned with the iPhone.
And right now they don't even have that process fully baked in yet. I cannot stress enough how much this is why it's coming out next year, is that it's not there yet. Right now they're doing it with an iPhone. You don't actually do the setup process with the headset itself. You do it with an iPhone that then pipes that information into the headset. And Lance Ulanoff was one of the folks who was able to try it, and I think did a really good job of detailing the experience a little more than I've seen from some folks. They have a special device that people who make lenses for glasses.
Zeiss makes the lenses.
Zeiss.
But you have to get your particular prescription.
Yes. And so
they had an optometrist testing machine
to figure out what to pop in. And they do this all. It's almost like
assembly line.
Assembly line. Yes, yeah. Exactly. And so you don't see what's happening behind the scenes. Then you go in, it's there for you to put on. Another thing is that they didn't show this. You don't see this in the videos. You don't see this. I didn't see this in the photos that I was able to capture. But there is also a strap that goes over the head to help add support. It's interesting that they're not showing that. I don't know if that means that eventually they hope they won't have to have that or what, or if it's an optional strap that's in the, you know, in the eventual box. But there's all this stuff that's kind of happening behind the scenes.
The
right
reason
now
I think that's kind of important is because one of the we happen to have one right here. Thank you, Anthony, for bringing yours in. One of the reasons I think it's important is because one of the use cases might be to have this at an Apple store to let people try it, or put it in an IKEA showroom to let people do that thing that Alex Lindsay thinks everybody wants to do, which is place furniture in their house. But if the setup is so lengthy and personalized, by the way, it even has iris recognition.
Yes.
So that it knows it's you when you put it on. It is a very personalized device. It's not something that you could just have in a mass market situation.
Yeah, and I think
we should say everything I'm saying is about this. We don't know what 5 years or 10 years or 20 years down the road they'll be. But I have to say, as far as I could tell, for reading a whole bunch of stuff and looking at a lot of videos, A+ in technological innovation. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about some of the features. Really, something only an Apple could do. In fact, Meta hasn't done it. HTC hasn't done it. Nobody's done this. I think in terms of performance of delivering a product with that's amazing, they've done A+, but I cannot help but point out that ergonomically this is a solid F. That people are not looking to strap screens on their faces. And so what happens when you develop something so cool? It's almost like they made the world's best, I don't know, submersible submarine, and it's like, oh, this is amazing, but it's just not it's not something people are looking for. You disagree, Andy?
I wouldn't say it's an F. I mean, the thing is, the
ergonomics are not good.
My overall take on this is that this is not the machine that Apple wanted to show off. This is they just got impatient. They stopped waiting for the display technology to become small enough, compact enough, and to do what they wanted to do. To make the device they wanted to make. So they decided, we're going to make something that is a very conventional looking, familiar device. Will be familiar to people who have been using VR headsets for the past 5 or 6 years. And we will simply move on from there after demonstrating that we know how to run these displays. We know how to get enough detail that you can read text pretty much at any size, no matter where you put the window in the virtual space, that lag is not going to be a problem. And that as far as comfort goes, it's going to be as comfortable as such a device can possibly be.
I do notice they never mentioned the weight. They never mentioned the fans.
The people getting back to
Marquez Brownlee said it was very heavy.
Yeah,
and he's got a pretty strong neck.
Yeah.
One more thing.
Most of the people that I read who got the demos, they said that the setup was actually very, very quick for what it was doing. It wasn't like very, very cumbersome. They also mentioned specifically that one of the things that Apple was admitting to was that they were still working on that interface between the device and your head. They had a limited number of sizes available to make sure that things fit correctly to people's heads, but they were working on by ship date having so many of these different variations.
Yeah, one of the things you'll do is have your face scanned, and they will custom mold a front piece for you.
Yeah. So, and that's another reason you're gonna not gonna see these in a mass market situation.
And the other thing is regarding the fan that most of the people I've been reading, and the one person I talked to said that you really couldn't hear the fan. So
okay, that's fine. It's good they have a fan because otherwise
I wouldn't say F. It's F compared to what it's you. But you are you do have it right on the money. We've been talking about this for a long time. That this is still
I'm joking
about this, but I mean
he's putting on his Viewmaster
to put this to put on this
you don't want to
really
wear that
big ski goggle thing is a really big thing. And I think it was it's kind of adorable that they came up with like the iView saying maybe it'll be okay if we have a lenticular screen that will make people be able to see your eyes behind it.
Well, there's another
totally dystopian
and weird thing. They showed a father taping a video tape, a 3D stereoscopic tape of his kid blowing out the candles. Yeah, that's great. Except all I'm seeing as a kid is creepy eyed dad.
Everyone I'd spoke to did not, no one that I spoke to had a positive reaction to that idea of having to wear it while you capture the video.
I think we don't live in a world where we want to distance ourselves more from people. We go to movies, look, I have a credible movie theater in my house. If I'm going to go to the movies, it's because there's other people there. So I think this is to me, from an ergonomic and a psychological point of view, this is the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Now, we've all said, you know, someday they're going to make these as spectacles that'll just, you know, sit lightly on your nose and you'll have augmented reality. Show me those then. I'll give it an A+ on ergonomics. But I don't even think the technology to make that exists. So Apple is doing a lot of hand waving here for something that I think is dead on arrival. Personally, dead on arrival.
Oh, wow.
They'll sell 1 million next year.
Yeah, that's fine. That's my prediction. Still dead on arrival.
Okay.
Well, and by the way, I don't think they're making a lot of money. People were creeped out about $3,500 bucks. That's probably pretty close to the bill of materials. I mean, it's probably
the problem that everybody else has now, if they disagree with you and decide that they want goggles, they want to make them. The problem is Apple has locked up so many patents along with
5,000
built
patents,
something built along with building something that is so self-contained. It will be hard at any price for anyone to put out any piece of device that's going to really compete as heavily with that right now. The biggest problem that HTC and Facebook had and Google had was a constant discussion about price, which Apple stopped talking about. And Apple was just like, I mean, that isn't the highest end headset that I've seen, but it's the highest publicly available one, or will be. And the ones that I saw that were nicer than this were $250,000 each.
So the Microsoft Kinect, which was the fastest selling consumer product of all time at that time, you probably don't even remember it.
Yes, I remember.
Sold 35 million units and is gone and was considered a massive failure. A lot of technology went into that thing. That sold 35 million and was considered a failure. I don't think this is going to sell a million. Big deal.
Well, I think the first couple of years, it'll probably be, you know, somewhere in the sub 5 million range. A million is going to be the basement. I think that 5 million is probably.
Well, it could sell 35 million and still be a failure. Of course, it's a lot more expensive than the Kinect was.
It's a lot more expensive than the Kinect was. And
it's not going to sell 35 million, I might add.
And I don't remember what the numbers are for the watch, but they weren't very big in the first
year. This is not the watch. This is not the watch. The watch was relatively much, you know, a tenth the cost. And was an accessory that you could wear that had some utility right out of the box. It was a watch.
Yeah.
Is the bigger question not does Apple need this to be the first big success in this idea of spatial computing? Can we not have a second generation that is the Vision without the Pro that becomes the consumer model?
I think you're still probably 3 or 4 years away from a consumer, a model that's less expensive than this one.
So this is the stopgap, right?
But it's not a stopgap. I don't think it was a stopgap. I think it is another step in something they were building from the beginning. So the thing is that there's no, No, it's not a stopgap. It's a step because they're not saying, oh, we couldn't get to what we wanted to. I think that they've been building a systematic process. This is part of that systematic process. I don't think they got impatient a couple of years ago. I think that they probably had this largely figured out 4 or 5 years ago. You know, in that as a headset, this is what the first one's going to be. And then the next one will be much more transparent. And the next one will be much more. I mean, Apple is oftentimes working at 10 years in advance. You know, and so the thing is that I don't think that this is, if they got impatient, it was in 2017 or 2018 or 2016. It wasn't last year or 2 years ago. And so the thing is that they, I think that they, the problem is that you can't build the set the headset that you want without people interacting with the headset that you can make today. So while you can
understand that,
talk about that. And what happened is all the other headsets have been dumbed down because of price. Like even the Facebook one, that's $1,500, which gave more headroom, price has been devastating to these devices because they just require so much technology to be fluid. And so Apple's making it more expensive. They're allowing themselves to figure that out.
The technology is in there that probably costs them, you know, close to that to put 11 cameras and seven screens.
It's incredible. It's an incredible
I understand
device.
That. I'm not, you know, they had to cost that much. In fact, Harry McCracken pointed out that the Apple One, which cost $666 in its day, in 1976 dollars would have cost $3,554 today. So it's $54 cheaper in real dollars than the Apple
my
One.
Apple IIe, my Apple IIe in today's prices was over $5,000.
I just should say that those things were much more useful immediately.
This is not,
you know, no one wants, I hate to tell you, Alex, I know you love it and there are people who love it. No one wants to put screens on their face. It's a horrible experience.
Well, not yet. I do think that this is the best that they could do right now. They had to have the first one of these.
So great.
Eventually
they colonized a craggy island covered in burnt guano. Congratulations. But you own it.
But this would be a very, very weird choice for Meta to have done for Apple. If they have the ability
money.
To simply say, exactly. If I think that they have the ability to launch a product like this without any real expectations that's going to be a success in any way other than it works. I think that what their priority is that they have to sell the idea that this is going to be so, the 4K display that you're going to have off of your Mac is so good that it's going to be the equivalent of a real display for you. When you have app windows floating in front of you, in front of an environment, that's going to be so easy to use as a display that you're going to be able to use it. They have to prove the idea that this is not just for training people in how to maintain an aircraft engine in the military. This is not just about gaming, that this is going to be a computing platform. So I think that their idea is that so long as they develop a first generation of hardware that can sell that idea that this is a platform for apps, not just a way to look at magic dinosaurs jumping up and down on the desk in front of you, they will consider that a win for the next generation to come.
And I think that one of the big things is that while everybody else had to figure out how to build all those things, Apple is making a lot of the apps that already exist just simply work in there. And so being able to, you're not leaving this to use something else, which is a big hill that everybody else had to climb, is like, what do we do and how do we get people to put it on? Well, there's just a ton of things that you can just go ahead and do in there. And so, and you know, I think a lot of
By the way, you say it that way. I'd say it's nice lock-in, Apple. This does not work if you are not. Do you have to own an iPhone to use it? I know it's a standalone computer, but
probably. I mean, it's not really going to be aimed at
nobody. Minds. Apple's no aimed yeah, well, I'll buy it. Do I need a Mac? Fine, I get an iPad too. Let's just buy everything. It's very good. It's a very good ecosystem play for Apple. Congratulations. Yeah. And the reason they could do that, Alex, is because it's basically, you know, iPad OS. I'm sure it's running a mock kernel. It's very similar, I think, to iPad OS, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, they're good at the platform State of the Union yesterday. They were running through like what will it be like to take an iPad app and modify it so that it will work on Vision OS. Again, assuming that you don't want to just have it just be an iPad window that's floating in front of you. And really, it's you drag something new into your Xcode, and then you simply decide here's your Swift view of your current app. Do you want to hang things off the bottom of it? Do you want to have certain things, and what do you want to add three-dimensional elements to it? If that's really all you want to do with it, you can basically promote it to being a Vision OS app very, very quickly. And of course, they want people to be more ambitious than that. And I will also say, as an aside, that if all it does is, hey, look, I can have virtual screens all around me, that's not terribly ambitious. And I hope that they crack the idea of 3D computing and 3D spatial computing as something more than I can, instead of having to next day a $320 new monitor to have a fourth or fifth screen on my desktop, I can just drag a window up there. It has to be better than that. And I don't think they really made that case yesterday. But again, it's about the ecosystem, about being able to take the app that you created, make amendments to it, and turn it into an actual Vision OS app that has shadows, that reacts to the light that's around you, that when people enter the room, that your app will fade into the background so that person can get the focus. All these things you get for free. That's a very, very powerful mojo for a developer.
So I think really that it is important to understand that this is next year, which, by the way, must have surprised a few people. This is not this year. This is next year. And that could early next year could be June. It could be a year out. So, well, let's say May 31st. The audience for this is obviously it's not us. It's not maybe us, but it's not consumers. It's developers. That's obvious. Now, did they give any indication when developers might get the first?
Developers I think that's were when given the opportunity to try it on last night.
No, I mean to actually develop for it.
That was where I was going next.
Well, they said.
Oh, sorry.
And at the event, Apple announced that they would be releasing Vision Kit within next month?
A couple of months from now. Yeah.
Thank you. Said.
And there's a virtual reality. There's basically a virtual environment inside of Xcode so that if you're testing out this thing without having the hardware, you basically have like a 3D first person shooter look at this fake room that they've developed inside of Xcode to test it out in. So mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get going in about 2 months, looks like.
So that's really the real question and the only question that matters is, will people develop for it? Right. I know you will, Alex.
And that's
I think
what is the calculation a developer has to make? They have to say, do I have the skills? Do I have a product that would fit this category? And finally, is there going to be a market for this a year or more out?
As a small developer, that's a hard conversation to have, is because it's a lot of investment with not a large market. As a large developer, I mean, I've been doing immersive media for 30 years now. So we've been building these things for a long time. And one of the things that's required to make this work is to do a lot of it. So you just can't think about how to make it work or how it should interact until you've done it. And so for a lot of the larger developers and gaming developers and infrastructural developers that want to get into this, they're going to build a small division that just, if it doesn't work out, they'll reorganize those three or four people. But there's going to be 3, 4, 5, 10 people in a lot of Fortune 100 companies that are figuring out what the next thing is, and trying to make sure that they're not caught behind, because it's not something it is very complicated and not something you can come up to speed really quickly with.
Yeah.
Well, again, if you're not very ambitious, you can make this is what bothers me.
You could do what Disney Plus promised. Bob Iger said, "We'll put Disney Plus on it." Sure.
Yeah, it's like, hey, great, you can watch 3D movies and it looks awesome. Hey, great, again, you can have virtual monitors for your iPad-esque apps. But if it really has to be more than that, I think, to be considered a cultural success.
At 4K per eye, just to be clear, at 4K per eye at the frame rates that it's going to run at, which looks to be approximately 83 frames a second.
How did you get that number? That's good to know, because they did not say that
the R1 chip. Yeah, they said the R1 chip pulls at 12 milliseconds.
That's perfect. Frames a second. They did say the latency was 12 milliseconds. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So that's about 83 frames a second. And what that means is that it's not just that you can watch Avatar on your headset. It's that it will look at least as good as it did in the theater. Like,
let me ask about that, because I was curious.
That's the distinction.
Because Avatar is not stereoscopic. Or is it?
Yeah. Avatar and Avatar 2 are both stereoscopic.
They're designed to be two eyes. Oh, I guess you wear goggles with them. Mm-hmm. And so when they showed it at IMAX, they used IMAX goggles.
Yeah, you use the goggles on. And so
are many movies stereoscopic? Is that?
Oh, there will be. I mean, the problem is that there's a lot of them that are done. Not very many of them are done well. So The Hobbit, the Avatar. Well, yes,
I think Kev was saying yesterday that for the Chinese market, because the Chinese are still very excited about 3D movies, most movies now are at least upconverted to 3D.
And the problem is the upconversion, the upconversion won't be that great. But and there's lots and lots of movies that are upconverted, because that was a thing for a while. After Avatar came out, everybody built, for all of us, I literally sent out an email this morning to a friend of mine who's got a couple 3D cameras and like, hey, you might want to rebuild those. So you might want to be able to get them put back together. He's got them sitting in pieces. But the, uh, the issue is that there's a bunch of things that'll be interesting in that development area. Like, for instance, it'd be really convenient to be able to show sports live, but it's really hard to get the rights to that. If only they had a soccer or football or something that they could shoot in stereo that they could put into that. Oh, wait. So the MLS makes a lot more sense now.
How hard is it now? So Micah found the thing that said the SDK is available later this month. How hard is it to develop this, though, without the hardware? I mean,
you can do a lot of it.
I want to say this is where I feel there might be in these early days. Apple very much positioned both on stage and in, the first introduction to developers, the idea that even more whenever we saw apps from iPhone and iPad make their way to the Mac, even more so. I don't think that developers necessarily, I think the first question they ask, you talked about the questions they should ask themselves. The first question they ask is, do I need to do any development for Vision OS? Because so many developers can take the apps they already have and just have them as part of a Spaces workspace that Slack that they don't need to make use of the volumes and spaces. Go ahead.
And to your point, there's a lot of stuff that'll be available to the user immediately without any special development. But there is a lot of opportunity to build out something that is really taking advantage of the platform. And those are the things that end up at the top of the store.
Absolutely.
You can port your thing over, but what's going to end up in the VR, the Vision store at the front page. Even when it's small, it's a lot of people willing to spend money on it because this is the only place they can go buy that stuff. When you do something, like Elements was not the greatest app in the world ever made to talk about the Elements. But when it came out for the iPad, everybody I knew bought it because we were just like, it's $15 and we all paid for it and we all wanted to see what they were doing in 3D and everything else. That's going to be another opportunity for them to go back and grab that data. Again, sports, you're probably going to see a bunch of stuff. Apple's probably going to dump a lot of money into the market. I was the beneficiary of Google and Facebook doing that. So there's going to be a lot of people that are pushing, they're going to spend a lot of money into that market to energize it and to prove and show models. And so I think that there's a lot that's going to be there.
I do not doubt that Apple will pour billions of dollars, literal billions.
For the next 5 years. For people who are
marketing and creating content and all sorts of stuff. Yeah. No, and that's, if you're going to say there's something in the Vision Pro's favor, it's that Apple is clearly all in on this thing. I mean, they must have spent $10 billion
A year,
right? That's what Meta spent.
Probably. That's what Meta spent.
Like, so they must have spent $10 billion for the last decade. That's a lot of money on this thing. And I expect they will continue spending significant amounts of money into the future. I think that their reputation is a reputational risk because they're, if it's not a success, people are going to look at Tim Cook. So they need it to succeed. I think that there's this fundamental thing that everybody seems to ignore. People do not want to strap devices.
I think you're right. I think 70% of the population probably doesn't want to strap anything on their face. I think it's probably 70%, 75%, but 30% of the population is still a lot of people,
So this will be something for the 30%. This is, and that will be enough of a market. It certainly will be a financially enough of a market for Apple. Apple doesn't have more than 30% of the smartphone market globally, but they have much more than the lion's share of profits. They can make money on it. I'm not saying they can't. I don't think this is going to change the world. And the only reason I'm being so negative is because, and I knew this would happen, you're going to see every pundit in the world swooning over this thing, especially people who've tried it on. And there is something to swoon about. And we're going to take a break and then come back and talk about the technology because this is Apple operating on all 8 cylinders. I mean, they've created something technologically amazing. I think it's worth pointing out that this is a yet to be demonstrated market.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, the thing that really, really sticks to my craw is that, the iPhone is a small percentage of the mobile market, but the market for people who actually own smartphones is phenomenal. It's getting close to 100.
And they created that market.
If you had feature phones.
Yeah.
No, that was a long, long process. I wouldn't agree with that. But
okay.
what I'm saying is that the development of the phone was such that they're so commoditized and they're so useful and so relevant to daily life that if you are at the lowest income level, the United States government will buy you a phone and set you up with a data plan.
That's right.
Just to make sure that you can have an email address, just to make sure you can get access to government services, that sort of thing. If this platform, I'm not just limiting this to Apple. If this platform is for people who could shell out $1,000 for this kind of a headset, and that's not the aspirational level of technology for the people who have the money to spend on something that may or may not be actually useful. And Leo, you had one of the most important points that everyone who got the demo today and yesterday has been swooning about Avatar 2 watching through this headset. But would you rather watch Avatar 2 in 3D through this $3,500 headset alone, or would you rather watch it on the sofa with your spouse and your two children on a $400 4K TV set? Watching it as a group together without having to buy everybody a $1,000 headset is absolutely the more enjoyable way to watch a movie, I think. I think that's going to be true for a long, long time.
That the 30% who buy and wear this thing are going to kind of be outcasts. Don't invite them to the birthday party.
We'll be nice to them.
We'll call them the spooky eyed set. All right.
They have the money to retribute against us. Like, no, let's be nice to them so they don't have us killed or something. Have their Tesla robots just like whack us in the knee or something.
Yeah. I mean, that's the fundamental thing. This is a single, emphatically single user device that gives you some benefit over what we have today, but not massively so.
They'll develop, but not yet.
Yeah,
I think it's a much smaller percentage of that 30%, but a small percentage of people will probably spend most of the day in it. Like they'll probably get
and those into people it. Will have a psychological damage.
Maybe
cannot be downplayed. It's funny because Microsoft, Apple, at the same time as they introduced this, introduced a new feature in watchOS that tells you to go outside and get some sun. Yeah. So I don't know if that's a good thing to be.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Phones are good for us.
You know, first thing, I mean, right. And they haven't, you know, and this is even more isolating. I mean,
phones and for both our physical eyes as well as our, you know, there's definitely problems with the process. I'm not saying that there isn't, but I'm still saying it's going to be a big deal. Like it's going to be a platform.
Well, it's a big deal now. Yeah.
I think that over the years, as they become there's going to be a high performance version that keeps on staying at $3,500 and keeps on getting better, might even go up to more money and be even better than what we see here. There's going to be a less expensive version that's going to, you know, they're going to have less and less expensive versions like they've done with every other product that they've made. Is they've made one that they could do at the price that they sold it at, then they go upwards and downwards, you know, from that. So we can probably expect 5 years from now to have one that's $800 and one that's $8,000. You know, like that's probably the direction Apple will take it.
And I should point out the vast success of smartphones are sub $50.
By total sales.
By sales.
But Apple has a much larger percentage of the profit.
No, I understand. Like, profit-wise, what you're looking at is profit, maybe. Although if you're spending $10 billion a year for 20 years,
most companies think
about to make a lot of money profit to make up for that.
Well, $1 million a year is still $3 billion. Yeah.
There are lots of
that's not including
that. That means you've only lost $7 billion that year.
Well, I mean, it's
not that Apple can't afford to.
Right.
I mean, only Apple could do this. And I think that's the thing that's of interest. People are getting mad at me now in the chat room saying, why are you so negative? I'll just stop. But you'll see that, you young people, in a year. here's the good news. In 2 years, you'll be able to buy this for $35. Just at the Goodwill.
The advantage that Apple has is that number one is that what it took to do this was an incredible investment that almost no other company
could do this. Yes.
Number two is that they have the skill set to do hardware at this level that almost nobody else has. Number three, I'm not nobody, but almost nobody, especially at that tolerance level. Number three is that they have an entire ecosystem that they're setting up, that they've already set up for the last 5 or 6 years, that's tied into the hardware, to many, many pieces of hardware, your AirPods, everything else is all tied into this experience. And nobody else has that entire thing. And what Apple has been slowly doing over the last couple of years is starting to play games. And this is the biggest, and I've said this, I don't know, for the last 5 years, that Apple's number one problem is antitrust, because they've taken what the size and ability that they have, and they're basically playing games that no one else can play.
That's a good point.
And they're going to go, we're going to play a game like the M1 chip.
And it's an argument for letting Apple get big, right? Or letting a company get big, because only they could do these kinds of moonshots.
There is no other company. But the problem for the rest of the industry is, like, there's no real answer to the M1 chips, because you can't really get everybody to agree. You know, like, Apple owns everything that's required to make that work. And being a vertical system is almost impossible to do, and you should never try to do it by yourself if you're a little company,
right?
Because that's almost suicide. But once you get over to the other side, you have no competition in true competition in where they're going. And
well,
so the
there is a big question mark, because can you make this at a consumer price? And if you do, what do you take out? I mean, what we're seeing is the Cadillac. This is the thing with everything.
It's not the Cadillac. I would say that this is a nice Honda. Like,
really?
Compared to where they're going to go with it. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you mean eventually. Right now,
they need technologies.
Right now.
If they're going to turn it into lightweight spectacles, they need technologies that don't exist right now.
Everyone's driving around little Yugos right now, and Apple brought in a Honda. They've got, you know, there's the Ferrari is still out there, and getting down to the Yugo will be hard for their Honda to figure out. It's going to be much harder for them to go downstream than upstream, you know, as far as what the feature sets and the quality.
By the way, you can't get a used Honda for $3,500. I just want to point out. If you really want a Honda.
Yeah, so anyway, it's very, very, you can get a 2000 Honda, the Prelude, you know, with a little flippy headset, yeah, you know, thing, yeah. You know,
so,
NSX, yeah. I think the real difficulty everybody else has is that once you put these on, it's, you know, the other headsets are going to look like Yugos,
right?
Know, and you're going to,
well, I think they've already done that. I mean, they've probably already done that. The Oculus, the Pro is, which was $1,500, is now down to $1,000, is nothing compared to this.
That's the problem is, yeah. And so the problem is that people are going to have a hard time if they try the headset on. The issue is that they're going to have a hard time going back to the other headsets. Like, that's going to be the thing that is going to be difficult, is that they're going to have a hard time.
Well, start budgeting, everybody, because you're going to have to save up some pennies because
I've got a giant piggy bank.
But what I say is that people will decide they can't afford that headset, but they're not going to say, I can't afford that headset, so I'm going to buy the Facebook headset. They're going to, or the Meta headset. They're going to say, I can't afford that, and I'm just not going to use headsets. Like, that, it's going to be, it's that much different than the other ones that are there. That's the problem.
No, unless the Meta or another competitor basically treats the, like we were talking about last week, this could be the Newton message pad Apple does again, where they create this beautiful kind of aspirational, really expensive thing. And then another company says, hey, that's great, but what if it could fit in a shirt pocket? What if it cost half as much? And what if anybody could write software for it without having to pay a fortune for a development kit? And then that's the platform that takes off for us. Newton is credible and wonderful and a highlight of technology.
Kind of funny that we are complaining that you had to sign up for a Facebook account to use the Oculus when you're almost certainly going to have to have an Apple account and register your irises and give them your firstborn. So
we have a different privacy relationship with Facebook.
We do. That's a good point. Yeah. I didn't. In fact, I really didn't want to create a Meta account. But I obviously have many connections to Apple. Anyway, I'm going to stop harshing people's mellow. I know you all want to live in the future. And, you know, here I am sitting here in the mud saying we're never getting to the stars. But we will talk about what is quite impressive in terms of technology. And by the way, the Mac Pro was announced.
In case you forgot.
Incidentally, and the 15-inch MacBook Air, which is probably the only thing everybody's going to buy. I bought one. We'll talk about that. And by the way, $1,000 less than a Vision Pro.
And also available to order now.
And available now. So there you go.
And useful.
And useful. Incredibly
arguably useful.
Useful,
yes. Our show today brought to you by, thank you, Andy, everybody, for putting up with my crankiness. I'll calm down now. Our show today brought to you by ACI Learning. Oh, man. I want to thank them. They sponsored our coverage yesterday of the Apple event, of the Microsoft events the week before, the Build keynotes. They sponsor the studios. They've really been very good to us. Thank you, ACI Learning. And one of the reasons is because of our long relationship with IT Pro. Wait a minute, you say, don't they compete with IT Pro? No, they are IT Pro. They've merged. IT Pro has been our trusted sponsor for the last decade. And they, as you probably know, most of us have experienced it, provide engaging, entertaining IT training to every one of our listeners. As part of the ACI Learning family, IT Pro's capabilities will continue to impressively grow, now even more so. Highly entertaining, bingeable, short-form content, about 20 to 30 minutes, full transcriptions. You can watch them make it. The studios are open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, and you can go in the, just like you watch us live, you can go watch them live, be in the chat room with them live. They have 7,000 hours of on-demand content, and the reason those studios are running all day, every day is because everything changes. The tests change, the certs change, software changes. There's new software, so they keep up. And that's the nice thing. You're getting the freshest content possible. 30% of ACI learners are MSPs now. I thought that was really interesting. I found that out the other day. That managed service providers, that's what we use. We don't have a full-time IT staff. We have Russell and his team. He's an MSP. And ACI Learning is great for MSPs. The MSPs love the practice labs that ACI Learning offers. They test and experiment before deploying new apps or updates without compromising their production systems, which is really nice because all you need is an HTML5 browser. You can do it on a Chromebook or iOS device if you want to, and then run instances of Windows Server and desktop clients. And I always say, and I say it because I mean it, because I did it. If you'd make a mistake, you just close the tab and you're back to square. It's okay. You didn't harm anybody. They also have, I love this, practice exam, so you can prepare for your certification examinations by taking the test before you take the test. That is the best way, I think, to get people used to the test format, how it's going to be. You can get the knowledge, but having the experience of taking the test ahead of time really makes a difference. One happy MSP team leader said, and I quote, "I had 110 engineers in the field. We had dozens of IT Pro accounts. Last year alone, they passed over 40 certs." Whatever your business, whatever your IT team, you know you need to keep them up to date. It's a benefit that keeps them employed. And by the way, keeping them employed is a high priority these days. Plus, they love learning more and they will benefit you because your company, your business, your MSP will be more secure, more effective. ACI Learning. You know how I know the people love ACI training? The average view dropout rate on most training videos is about 70%. Only 30% make it through to the end of the video. With ACI Learning, 80% make it through to the end of the video because the videos are compelling, they're entertaining, and even more importantly, they're valuable. You're getting what you need from them. So don't settle for subpar training. You can use ACI's Learn Pro portal to assign courses, upskill your MSPs, manage seats, assign and unassign team members. You'll get great graphical, views of how it's going. Retain top talent. Upskill your team with IT Pro training from ACI Learning. ACI Learning's courses are easy to navigate, so much more straightforward than traditional training programs, and they fit your style and your needs. And by the way, ISO certified. You're getting the world-class training your team deserves. Ask that of the other guys. Right now, as an individual, you get 30% off. If you use the offer code TWIT30, that's for a standard or premium individual IT Pro membership. Don't worry. Great discounts for group learning for teams from 2 to 1,000. The volume discounts start at 5 seats across audit, IT, and cybersecurity readiness. ACI Learning has premium training options waiting for you. Go.acilearning.com/twit. Go.acilearning.com/twit for more information and a free 2-week training trial for your team. That's enough to complete everything you need for a cert, actually, if you work hard at it. Go.acilearning.com/twit. Thank you, ACI Learning. We appreciate your support. I've really been impressed reading through, you know, of course we saw a, you know, half hour video, but reading through later the articles, Lance's article in Tech Radar, Marques Brownlee's video about the technology, really, that's what most impresses me. It strikes me as A plus technology, 4K screens. They said postage stamp sized. Is that, that seems smaller.
Large postage stamps, I think.
Okay, a big postage stamp. Plus, if you need correction, if you wear glasses, Zeiss lenses that are magnetically fitted in. Mm-hmm. I think that's cool.
I'm sure that those will be really discounted and not very expensive to add to your.
Yeah, well, heads. You already spent $3,500. What's another $500?
$500 is yeah. What, that's my guess.
Turn even four.
Yeah, you can wear your contacts if you want, but I think you'd want to wear those lenses. It's a fovea. This is really cool. I was hoping they would do this. The rumors were they would do this. It's a foveated display. Alex, you better explain what that is.
Yeah, a foveated renderer, basically what it does is it's looking at, there's basically static or dynamic. So a static foveated renderer is going to be a renderer that assumes that you're not going to look to the sides. And so it's going to focus all of the resolution, possibly frame rate, all into the center of this or the center of where it thinks you're looking at. What Apple appears to have is a dynamic foveated renderer, and that dynamic foveated renderer follows your eyes. Mm-hmm. So it's literally watching your eyes moving around the screen and where the center of your focus is, which is actually a pretty small area of focus. It is making sure that you get all the resolution that you can possibly that you need or that it can provide there. And then as you move away into your periphery, it starts to lower that resolution and potentially even frame rate away. So mostly resolution, most likely in that area. And so by doing that, it allows it to take limited resources. Obviously, we had unlimited resources. We would not use a foveated renderer. We would just make everything really sharp. By having a foveated renderer, what we're able to do is have just the resolution that you need at any given moment. And it appears that Apple has done this very well. I mean, if you don't do it well, you see it as you move your eyes quickly.
Yeah, it would be weird.
Start to see edges and so on and so forth. But in this case, it sounds like they've done a pretty good job of it. And that means that that's part of what allows them to have such a high resolution for those is that the resolution of the screens is that high, but how many bits it's actually sending to those screens at any given time is much lower, which takes a lot of weight off of the processors.
These are micro. By the way, I think foveated rendering might help with the comfort as well, I suspect, and maybe even with the nausea, because it's going to give you the sense of peripheral vision, right? More the natural.
The thing with nausea is primarily frame rate. So that is the thing that a lot of people have done a lot of R&D.
12 milliseconds. So
12 milliseconds are about 83 frames a second, but that's where most people have an issue is in, there's two things that can cause nausea. One is that your inner ear and your basically most nausea is related to your inner ear is feeling something that your eyes aren't seeing.
That's what happens with seasickness. Yeah.
Is that your eyes aren't seeing because for a million years before we did all this other stuff, if your eyes were seeing something different than your inner ear, you had been poisoned by something you just ate and you need to get it all out of the system as fast as possible. And so we had people who survived had a natural reaction to throw up, you know, when they did that. And so, so what happens with low frame rate is that you, so the thing that happens with low frame rate is that your eyes are behind, which is another sense.
And so
what we found, I mean,
your head turns and then the picture turns and your body says there's something wrong here. Ooh.
And it's very subtle. It's, you know, the Disney did a bunch of research on this in the 90s and, you know, with big Onyx boxes and everything else. And they would turn the frame rate up and down to see for rides, when do you blow chunks? And it was, between 12 and 18, depending on the person, about 12 to 18 frames a second. At 12 frames a second, no one could hold it.
There's also the issue of the difference between the focal length that your eyes are seeing by triangulation versus your actual focus distance. And those are not going to match because the screens are close, but the objects look
far. But the apparent, what it appears for you is important in that area. You know, because the reality is when you're looking through glasses, you're looking through something like that. You're looking at something that's right in front of you that is sharpening what's out there. So it's where we're focused to, in that area. But the issue is that the frame rate, as well as the other thing that matters a lot, and this is going to be where they're going to have trouble with 3D movies, is that if you change the orientation of the camera, you know, a lot or even a fair bit in 3D, you'll get sick. Because we used to do this. We had this thing in one of the 360 shots that we did that was stereo. At the end, my brother was Steadicam. He'd get to the end of the walk and they'd turn the Steadicam sideways. And it always told us when that person got to that part of the Oculus test, because they would take the headset off immediately. Like they would just throw it, they'd pull it up. They're like, "Oh, you're done." You know. Anyway, so you can't change it. And where that becomes a problem is you have to making content for this is why it's important to do a lot of content. Making content for these headsets is completely different than making content for TV, because you actually have to slow down the edits. You can't, for some people, especially at higher frame rates, you can't have big moves, big helicopter moves, jib moves, shaky camera. All those things are going to affect people's experience of the piece. And so you have to build the content. Eventually, people are going to not be building content that they're trying to take to the theater and to the headsets.
Oh, interesting.
What you're going to start seeing is high frame rate, you know, at least 60 frames a second, possibly 120 eventually. But high frame rate content has less cameras, possibly only one camera. Experiencing those things and kind of slowing everything down, because that's what people are going to like. And that's also why, you know, the cameras on the headset are going to be really good. As soon as people realize they can't treat the headset like they treat their cell phone, which is like to go up and down like this and be dancing. When people put those headsets on to shoot their kids or, you know, whatever they want to shoot film in 3D, they're going to have to think like a camera person and not move their head very much.
Rich DeMuro, who was my replacement on the radio show, and by the way, proves that Apple hates me, because he not only was invited to the event, but got to try on the headset. He said he tried to get sick and he couldn't. I don't know how hard he tried.
I don't know how hard he was able. He was...
Yeah. Ate some lukewarm pork and everything. Yeah. before getting in there. You know,
passing the outside world into the headset has a huge impact on how you whether you feel sick or not.
But remember, you're not always doing that. You may not want to do that. That's what that crown does. How much it dials in, how much of the outside world. You're right. If I'm a person gets nauseated, I might want to dial in more of the natural world. These are now. I want to know if anybody knows. If it sounded like he said micro OLED.
Micro OLED, he did.
Micro, not yep. micro yep. LED.
But micro OLED, yes.
There's a big difference. These are OLED screens.
He also said micro OLED with Apple Silicon backplane. So that was within the presentation.
That's
so I'm trying to figure out exactly what he means by that. Exactly. Yeah.
7.5 micron pixels, 23 million on two panels. If I do my math correctly, that's 11.5 million per panel. That means 4K, roughly 4K. Three element lenses as well, which is, they said that's a big deal. I don't know why that's a big deal, but anybody stop me. I'm just going to keep going through the specs and you stop me if you have something to add. M2 in this. Of course, it'll be an M3 next year, an M4, and on and on. Actually, it's interesting because if it comes out next year, it probably should be an M3. They might end up shipping it with an M3, I would imagine. And a new chip that Apple's designed called the R1, which sounds like a DSP. It's designed to support all the inputs, the cameras and so forth, and keep that responsive. Yes.
I mean, it's kind of amazing. I mean, the R1 is an amazing chip. it gets back into, you have to know a lot about chip design to build something that is built, really purpose-built for this headset, you know, and not a lot of companies could, you know, put that together. So, I think that's part of what makes this thing work.
There are 12 cameras, 5 sensors, 6, including LiDAR, by the way, in the bridge of your nose, 6 microphones. Yeah. In order to do processes within 12 milliseconds, you need something special. That's the R1.
Yeah, the R1.
Do we know any more about the architecture of the R1? Do we know anything about it? It sounds like a DSP.
Yeah, I don't know.
We don't know.
I don't think they showed
it. They've not revealed.
BM2 and the rest.
Yeah. To quickly go back, so in the process of creating OLED, you deposit it onto a substrate. The Apple Silicon backplane is that substrate. So they made a custom designed substrate on which the
that's
OLED
what's
is
switching
placed.
The pixels on and off and all of that.
Okay.
Micro LED has actually an LED per pixel. It's a different, entirely different technology. And eventually we'll be on probably your iPhone and your Mac. And maybe it'll be inside the Vision. I don't know. The Vision Pro. Yeah. By the way, were we surprised that it's Vision OS after they trademarked all those other OSs?
After they threw us all those.
No, there were kind of red herrings and galore there, weren't there?
I think they're trying to catch more leakers.
Maybe that was it.
That's how many they need to reserve.
Yeah. Vision Pro is the name of the device. And note the Pro, and everybody's been saying that this is a Pro device. Vision OS is the operating system. Any more insight into what it really is? It does look a little bit like iPad OS. I'm sure it still has it has all the features of Mac OS, right? It does support Unity. Alex, I know you prefer the Unreal Engine.
I think we've talked about this for a long time. I think that Epic's lawsuit with Apple was an epic failure.
Yes.
Like it is.
It should support the Unreal Engine, but it won't.
Well, Apple had, it's not just that Unreal could have done this. Unreal was being brought up on stage every keynote for a couple of years as Apple built up towards this. They obviously knew where Apple was going with this. They were building into it, and they decided that taking a high risk maneuver was more important than what they were getting, added onto, and opened up the lawsuit. And now, and the thing is that most of us we had forgotten that Unity really did anything. Right. By the time the lawsuit started, we had kind of forgotten Unity, and I'd done a lot of Unity development. And then as soon as this happened, all of us were kind of like, well, we'll see what Apple does with Unity. And the question really was, is Apple going to build its own development platform, or whether it's going to use Unity's? And it looks like it's a bit of both. So Apple's building up their own capacity to do that, but they've taken a relatively good, a solid path, which is they can't fix everything.
And Joe Rossignol, who's a senior reporter at Mac Rumors, says that there is a WWDC session just came out that calls it XROS. And the slide is XROS. So apparently XROS was an internal name, but it's Vision OS. I think that's kind of interesting.
I think it's going to be interesting to see how the process with Unity, though. I mean, I think that, and it is helpful because there's no way they could build their own OS,
right?
From the ground up to do that.
Their own engine. Yeah.
Yeah.
The most advanced personal electronics device ever. Crows Apple. And I think that's fair, actually. It probably is.
It's incredibly advanced.
I mean, they've built a spaceship for your face. Yeah.
Yeah.
Private because those aren't really your eyes. Does it? Mm. Now, here's a thing I want to know. Is it like one of those uncanny things like Jesus with it follows you wherever you go? Like the eyes are always.
I think this is part of the reason why we didn't see anyone with it on their face because they have not.
Yeah. Why did not? Okay. Conspiracy theory time. Why did we not see anybody wearing it?
I genuinely feel it's because
any executive, any Apple,
no one was allowed to take any video with it.
It would have fallen apart if they put it on
the demo because I don't think they've nailed the outward eyes. View yet. Yeah. It looked good in the photos that we saw, but it's.
Do you think, Alex, those are faked eyeballs?
No.
No,
okay. I think
there was an uncanny valley element to it.
It looks like when Burke is wearing his motorcycle helmet with the visor down and you could see his eyes through it. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, that would be the best case.
There's been so many memes done of Mark Zuckerberg wearing headsets and stuff like that I think that Apple probably just said, we don't want to be those memes. Like, and we don't want to be the ones that they put those pictures on. I think that's probably why they did it.
They're going to have creepy eye memes. I think there's memes awaiting no matter what you do, to be honest with you. Those eyes are generated from the scan that you do with the LiDAR on your smartphone, on your iPhone initially. And that also creates your avatar for use in FaceTime. I have to say the FaceTime use case is not compelling. It's not like, and they did this because they didn't want to do what Meta did with the spaces and the feet, the legs are missing and all that. Those people are not in the room with you. They're on a screen. So basically you're just seeing a FaceTime screen with.
I thought that demo was the least compelling thing that they did in the entire
It's no better than regular FaceTime. It's worse because they're not seeing you. They're seeing your avatar.
Yes. Why? And this, I think that this was the one place where I felt there was a mistake done in the keynote, which is they chose later on in the technology portion to talk about what you looked like in a FaceTime call. So I kid you not, when they first showed off FaceTime using it, everybody was so distracted talking to one another going, so what do I look like in it? What do I,
yes,
no one was paying attention.
That's what we were saying.
No one was paying attention. We were all asking questions. We were all processing in our head. How is it possible that we look? And then they finally addressed it. I think that that was a mistake because it took everybody out of the moment where up to that point you heard these oohs and ahs. Suddenly there was this murmur of, why are they not telling us what we look like in this view?
Right.
And
they should have focus grouped the presentation, because the other time that happened is when they said, and we're finally bringing to the iPad an app that we've never brought to the iPad before. And I think everybody in our audience, and I bet you everybody in this theater was saying, the calculator?
Oh, I thought it was Xcode.
Health. Yeah.
Wasn't okay, the calculator, was health, but we'll get to that. Yeah. I hope.
Yeah. But yeah,
there's only 8 hours in the day, but if we can, we'll get to that.
But actually just quickly going back to iView, you are right that, you know, the trick where you have that roadside picture of Jesus with the eyes follow you.
Yeah.
It's the same technology. It's a lenticular display, so that if people look you from one side, they'll see the side of your face. They look you from straight ahead. But yeah, when
I'm wearing that and our housekeeper comes into vacuum, everywhere she goes in the room, it'll be look like I'm looking at her.
Yeah.
Right.
That's how it's supposed to work. I like the idea of it. I like that they're thinking about, well, how do I interact with people in the room? How do people know that, hey, look, I'm actually got the knob turned all the way to, I don't want to see anybody in the room. So don't think that you're actually making eye contact with me, versus how do I give myself a sense of feeling of presence? But just like with those avatars, it seems like the risk of looking incredibly dorky with this, because this technology kind of works. It works admirably well, but not well enough. I think the risk is very, very, very high. I do think that I did notice one thing that kind of got me interested in the avatars, that they mentioned that, they can also represent you basically if there are people who are just using a regular Mac or regular iPhone, to FaceTime with you, your avatar will be just basically will be you, in their view of you in the FaceTime call. It made me wonder if that couldn't be something that I could use, even if I didn't actually have the headset on. Like if I owned it and I've, or in some way, shape, or form, I've created this avatar, but it's like, I want to do Mac.
No, I think they said it could.
I don't want to have to find a hoodie, clean hoodie.
Didn't they say that that's a feature?
Sega.
They're going to move that into FaceTime. I think they said that was a feature in iPadOS. Yeah.
No, that's definitely a feature, but what I'm wondering is that if it will work, if I don't own one of these things.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, because you're not, that's why you don't use your thing to scan it. You use your phone to scan it. So,
I think that what's interesting, if there was ever a zigzag, I think it's actually that face there, because I think that I really felt like Memojis was building up to be you.
Yeah, no kidding.
When you want to be virtual.
Yeah.
And then it felt like, the problem is that the uncanny valley level of that is going to be like, even just seeing the demo at its best quality, I could see the weirdness that happened in that. It was very, you know, Polar Express, you know, like, you know,
it was Polar
Express. Uncanny Valley.
Alex, that is so.
That's the poster child for Uncanny Valley. Yeah.
So I think that it's so close. And the problem is if I had the choice of scanning my face and being in there or being my Memoji, and I think this is one thing that Apple really has done well, is Apple has the only Memojis or style like that potentially looks better than you do when you turn them on, whereas all the other ones are kind of like a, you know, Metas and Snap and everything else. They make ones that they all are like a pretty dorky version of you. And I think that Apple has actually done a really good job with Memojis. Now we're kind of throwing that out and doing something that's going to be, I'd rather be a cartoon than be something that's really close to my face, you know. So
the other thing I thought was way advanced ahead of anything anybody else is doing. There is no physical controllers. It's looking at your hands, and you don't have to put your hands in front of you. Your hands can be in your lap. And the gestures, similar to the gestures Microsoft proposed for the HoloLens, but it looked like a lot more effective because, and this is, I think, the most cool thing, it's tied to your eye tracking. So they have, it sounds like, very sophisticated eye tracking.
Yeah.
Because the interface requires, if you want to say click an icon, that you look at the icon. The icon, once it sees you looking at it, pulses a little bit. And then You tap two fingers together anywhere, like on your lap, and you click it. Your eyes are the cursor. Marques Brownlee said similarly, cameras. You could look at a field and then start talking, and it would automatically, just as it does on the Apple TV when you press the button, it would automatically fill in the field with text. I think that's pretty innovative and does solve a problem that other headsets have. And it really, you know, one of the things I really find puzzling, Meta's talked a lot about this, Microsoft talked a lot about this, Apple did too, is the use of these devices not as entertainment devices, but as productivity tools. Mm-hmm. And if and you know, that's why the HoloLens had flicks and swipes and all sorts of weird gestures. They had a gun gesture. And I don't know if that's really what anybody wants to do for a living.
Well, and for HoloLens, the HoloLens had a deltoid problem, which is that your shoulders, you had to raise your hands, everything you want to do is smart.
Yeah.
And so you had to hold your arms up for, if you're going to use it for a long period of time, 2 hours or something, it's not a big deal to do this every once in a while. It's a big deal if you're going to do it for 2 hours, you're going to be up like this.
Fatigue is an issue
in
general with all of these, which is how long do you want to wear this thing? It's going to get sweaty on your face. I don't care what kind of custom muff you've made, what kind of fans you have. And then there's the issue of, you know, it's just kind of an uncomfortable setting. So Apple really has solved this by making sure that you can't wear it for more than 2 hours. The battery dies.
Well, you can plug it in.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But I wonder how hot it gets when you use it that way.
So it's a battery pack that has a Type-C connector on it, as well as the proprietary connector that thwacks onto your onto your helmet.
The people who got the demo say that it actually kind of twists and locks into the helmet, which kind of makes sense because
you're moving around.
Yeah, you don't want to.
Well, not only that, but if it disconnects, you're suddenly completely blind.
You crash.
You don't have see through. That's actually just cameras that are doing that. So they would want that to be locked in. Although that does, I wonder how much discussion they had on how long does this tether have to be to the battery? Because they're going to be, if you have to say a requirement of using this device is that you have to have a shirt with a pocket in it, or you have to have clothes that have pockets in it, that's going to be a problem for
I can't wait for the third parties to start selling little pouches. Yeah. That I can sling.
Oh yeah,
across.
That's what's gonna happen. Yeah,
get your. I'm waiting for your Hermes
Scotty vest. There'll be the Scotty vest. Vision line.
Right.
They also have a Type-C connector on it. That's for charging it, obviously. But if you plug that into the wall or a computer or something, we don't know how much voltage it needs, but it will presumably continue to operate forever.
You can choose to operate your house or this, not both.
Yeah. Yeah, that is one of the few things that I spotted. Like, I wonder if they're waffling here. They said that you can use it all day. They didn't, but like Blanca kind of alluded to, did they say that theoretically it can draw power all day, or are they saying that no, it's not ever going to overheat and give you a thermal shutdown like the other headsets do after a certain amount of time? That will be, I'm sure they don't have that answer today, and they will have that
exactly
answer in January
next year
or February.
When it launches, then we'll know what all day.
There's got to be a reason why these demos last 30 minutes, but then they kick the hell out after 32 minutes. Like, no, take it off now, for God's sakes, while they hose you down.
We studied thousands of heads, said Apple.
That caused a huge laugh in the audience.
Yes,
for sure.
To create the most advanced personal electronics device ever. And yeah, pretty impressive. Again, A+ for technology, A+ for execution. I think the jury's still out on whether this is a product anybody wants.
I graduated Stanford, top of my class. I got hired by Apple, like my first pick, and I spent my first 6 months measuring heads.
Well, and I noticed a number of tweets and social posts from people who said, you know, I've been working on this for, you know, somebody said 30% of my life, and I'm really glad to see it out finally. I do not want to in any way criticize anybody who worked on this. You have done brilliant work. It's amazing what you've created. You've taken a product category that was really not very acceptable and at least raised it to the level that people want to wear it. I am not quibbling with that whatsoever. It's very impressive what Apple's done. I'm just thinking from the point of view of a product, if it's going to be a...
Yeah, only time will popular.
Tell. And only time you will tell that.
We can't guess.
Yeah, yeah. I've kind of gone out on a limb here being Mr. Cranky, but I will be sincerely surprised if in a few years this is something people are wearing. I will be.
No, I'm glad this is part of the conversation because this is Apple is so good at running these events. They're designed to dazzle people who don't have a lot of time to really sit and think. They really have to publish like that day. And so there is a lot of stuff that is like, oh my God, it's so bright. It's so shiny. I'm glad to see that in a lot of, and most of the hands-on stuff that I've, writings that I've seen, it is very balanced about how I was really impressed with it. But the thing is, my head was a little tired after 30, when I took it off after 30 minutes, it was kind of disorienting going back to the real world, balanced by, hey, I could actually take notes on my phone. That's how good, like I could see through. We have to make sure that we know that what we're seeing is kind of like what we saw in the very first iPhone demo. We're seeing the first, they're pulling it out of the barn all nice and shiny and bright, so that putting it on that little turntable so that we can all take a look at it and take pictures of it. This is not the time for where it's even possible to really rate what it can do, how practical it is, and how people are going to be able to even tolerate it on their heads. That's going to come probably in December when Marques Brownlee and I, Justine, get theirs a month before everybody else.
Right. And I think Marques's video was actually pretty balanced. I was impressed by his video. I thought he did. If you're going to watch, I didn't see all of them. I didn't see Justine's, but if you're going to watch one, I think that was a pretty good one to watch. He seemed to have a fairly balanced point of view on the whole thing.
Yeah. You can't praise it. You can't slam it yet.
It's an interesting thing. And God bless him for putting hundreds of billions of dollars. And even, you know, the other thing that's unknown, even if it isn't something that people want now, Apple's going to spend so much marketing money. You're going to see ads on football like you've never seen, right?
I've already seen ads in social media places.
Sure. It's a little weird to spend any money on advertising now since they don't have a product. But I think come this fall, depending on when they really plan to ship this, you're going to start really seeing a blitz. I mean, if you spend $100 billion developing a product, you can spend $10 billion advertising it. $10 billion is a lot of ad time. And by the way, I'd just like to say, as negative as I've been about the Vision Pro, we certainly would love some advertising dollars. $100 million, that's all we ask. A fraction.
Well, all I can say is you're not going to get it by saying talking the way you're talking.
I'm not going to get it. You know what? That's the beauty of this is I don't have anybody's ass to kiss. Exactly. And, you know, Apple wrote me off years ago, probably rightly so. And I'm going to be honest. That's all. Was it surprising to any of you that not once was the word or the letters AI uttered? Not once.
They said machine learning, but that was it.
That's interesting because I have now the page from the tracks at WWC up on my screen. And yeah, there's a whole big ML and vision track, including detecting animal poses, discovering machine learning enhancements and create ML, and lifting subjects from images in your app. But obviously, there's a lot of AI AI is a terrible term. So let's say machine learning, that's actually really a better term, in everything in this Vision Pro. I mean, it's doing a lot of work, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. One more break. And then I think we should, I'll do a break in a bit, but anything else anybody wants to say about the Vision Pro and Apple's vision for this?
Scrolling.
I went through my notes, you know, my outline. I do have to say Craig Federighi, it's a living God. He was very much looking for the dad joke moment. Of course, last time it was running his fingers through his hair as he ran from one set to the other. This time it's playing. Right. Is that real? You think that? I guess it is. No.
Well, the coolest. I never thought I'd hear Ozzy Osbourne on a.
Yeah, he really shredded on that. And then look at the Marshall stack. I feel like he might have given a little concert at one point. Like,
the quick thing I'll say is I'm most looking forward to what we hear about this device come fall, come winter, leading into the next year, because everything that I have heard and learned and seen and am able to discuss suggests that this is very much iPhone demo, first iPhone demo land right now. And I would like to know what they couldn't talk about yet because they can't promise it, but might eventually be
interesting.
I also think they kept a lot of dry powder. Like that was much less than I think that they've prepared. I think that as we get closer to the actual sell date, there's a lot of powder of what they can show that they didn't talk about at all.
Really?
That's there.
So are you saying that because you want it to be true?
I just think that might be the case.
I think,
well, that was a good look.
Alex
knows something, I think, but okay, go ahead.
I think you're very correct. But I'll move on to the,
You're very correct.
I think you're very incorrect, but that's because I haven't signed any documents.
before we move off it, the last thing I wanted to say was just that I'm actually kind of intrigued about the people that are going to buy it, at least as everyone's going to have like a pie chart of how they justify the $3,500. And it's kind of, they're going to say, like, oh, $600 for watching videos, $400 because it'll be a nice thing for gaming, $800 because I really want to develop for this. But I think that for a lot of people, one of the biggest pieces of the pie chart are going to be being able to do spatial photography and spatial video. The idea of being able to record the scenes around you, not because you're creating models or that you're making scenery for some other project, but just to capture something in the greatest fidelity. I agree that, oh my God, if you're spending your limited time on this earth with your adorable 3-year-old child and you have this big half of a watermelon on your face, I think you're parenting. But just to finish off, but I still remember a number of years ago, I tested and wrote a review of Sony had these digital HD 3D binoculars where it was looked like very, very traditional binoculars, but essentially each half was essentially an HD camcorder that was giving you video. And the number of time and during the month that I had it, I would do things like I would be at Faneuil Hall and I would with my binoculars be watching like a street performance, and then to be back like in my house and put these things up to my face and to be watching this again in 3D with decent video and everything. That was a powerful thing. And so the idea, if $3,500 is going to be a bit rich, but I could see somebody who, if I had made better professional and or financial decisions 20 years ago, and I had that kind of money to spend, I would be really keen to buy it. Again, 40% of that pie would be, I just want to take shots of where I am right now, not to replace my life, but because later on, I think I'm going to enjoy the fact that I have these like immersive 3D recordings of this space that I'm in that I like.
And I think that the other thing is that so I thought that was one of the most compelling things about Google Glass was that I could look up and I could say, you know, Google, take a video or whatever, and it would start to record. And I have these incredible little videos that I just found recently on my Google account of my kids when they're much younger from my point of view, now only in 2D and 720p. I'm going to assume that this is going to capture the video probably pretty close to the resolution that I'm looking at it at 4K because they can do that with their phone the phone can do it. So they can probably do it there. If I'm getting those, there's two things there. One is that there's going to be an interesting market for shooting things that you want to experience. Another thing is to shoot things of the family. And when other people have these headsets, I think that shooting for them will be also, interesting. And I think you're going to see people going to a sporting event or other things and shooting something for someone that's in 3D that is all there and they can then watch it as if they were there. And I think that's going to be an interesting little model that occurs there.
It's going to be an interesting driver for when the first adopters will be shooting all this video. And maybe a lot of people, when it comes down to $1,500 and they're like, oh, I really wish it were $1,000. But now that I see that, there are these three or four different VR channels that people are telling me about people who were at live events that recorded really, really well. And finally, I did think that since you mentioned it, I did think that was really, really interesting because that was the exact same demo that was in like the intro of Google Glass. Like, hey, I'm a mother and I'm able to play with my child, have eye contact with her, play with her while still like capturing this moment in video without feeling as though like I'm parked behind a camcorder. So I thought that was an interesting bit of like cross pollination.
Glass was a little bit more transparent. Like for this, exactly. For the Apple one, it'd be more like, I'm going to take a moment with this and I'm going to put them back because
hello, I'm I don't plastic want my kids. Man.
Your I just mother. Really need to know if I can shower with vision or not.
Oh God.
It's gonna be waterproof.
I think it's sad that people want a life so different from the life they're leading that they're willing to.
Didn't you point that out, though, that there's a lot of media that sort of centers around getting out of the life they're living because everything is bleak and horrible and
every we're all single going
to
eventually
have to stay inside because it's too hot.
Every single use of VR in fiction mm-hmm. and in film is because they're escaping from dystopia, mm-hmm. whether it's Ready Player One or Snow Crash. We're a Neuromancer. It's Wall-E. Always to escape at Wall-E. And you know what? That is probably the single best reason these are going to succeed, because we're going to be in a living hell in about 50 years. Yeah. So here's the get me the glasses. By the way, I cut this out of our Booster whiteboard Google. In the other studio. We've already started talking about what we might call the next shows this week. Here we go. Welcome to This Week in Vision. Vision today. It's Vision Weekly or Hands-On Vision. No, Hands-On Vision. That's how about Eyes on Vision?
Oh, that's funny.
Ooh.
Pin, never
you want to host that? Eyes on Vision?
I was going to say pinch
I'll buy
my
you
vision,
one of those.
But I don't think that's
pinch me.
We have to do the whole show though. I think the whole show has to be done in the, you know, as a FaceTime in the GOG. In yeah. The, I think that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, eventually we will we'd be offer replaced you, with those.
Yeah, we'd offer you that 3D stereoscopic view of the show. You could wander around behind us.
Yeah.
You know, Apple announced some things that people actually want, believe it or not.
And can get,
and
more importantly.
Can even buy. We'll talk about that in just a bit with our fabulous panel. Our fabulous. Show today, fabulous, brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Did you know? This is a wild stat. On average, it takes 11 weeks to hire for an open position. 11 weeks. That's almost 3 months. That's a quarter. That's time that everybody else has to work extra hard to fill in the gaps. That's the amount of time, 11 weeks, that the manager, your boss, or you, if you're the boss, has to go through this kind of not pleasant process of finding people. Do you really have that kind of time? No, but good news. You don't have to. If you're listening today, I got some great advice for you. Do what we do. We had an opening in our, I've mentioned this before, in our continuity department when our wonderful Ashley decided to, you know, she wanted to work a little closer to home. She had a long commute. So she gave us 2 weeks notice. We immediately, I remember Lisa doing this. It was at breakfast, went to ZipRecruiter. We've done it many times before, posted the job. Within literally an hour or two, we started getting, I love it because Lisa's very, you know, it's stressful. She's going, oh, what are we going to do? I don't know. We're going to admit we're down a person. It's going to be very hard. 2 weeks from now, I'm going to have to work, you know, 8 hours extra, whatever. Within an hour after posting, she said, oh, this person's, we ended up getting, I think, 3 or 4. Really, it was very tough. We chose the best, though. Viva, we love you. And we're so glad we use ZipRecruiter. Stop waiting. Start using ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter can help you find qualified candidates for all your roles fast. And right now you could try it for free. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. There's so many things to love about ZipRecruiter. I'll tell you some of the ones that we love. One, you're posting to the large, you know, you're casting a broad net, the largest possible group of people. Because if you agree, the right person's there somewhere, you got to reach them, right? So one post on ZipRecruiter goes to 100 plus job boards. It goes to social networks. It goes everywhere. Now, you've cast a wide net, but you might say, in fact, if you've ever done this before, I know what you're saying. You're saying, but I don't want them all to call me. Are they going to all email me? No, it doesn't. No, that's the beauty of it. It all goes into the ZipRecruiter interface. They even reformat resumes so they're easily scanned because they're all in the same format. They even allow you to add screening questions, true, false, multiple choice, even essays. So you can screen out people who just don't fit right away. You don't waste any time looking at those. And then you can quickly rank the people, eliminate the ones that don't fit, hire the right one fast. It's so great. So that's That's one thing I love about ZipRecruiter. Another one, though, that's really amazing. They use their they have more than a million current resumes on file because people come to ZipRecruiter looking for work, right? So they use their powerful matching technology to quickly find and send the most qualified people to you. So in addition to the applications you're going to get, you're also going to get a message from ZipRecruiter saying, hey, look, we found these five people who seem to fit your needs. Maybe you'd want to talk to them. And then you look at who you like and you invite those people. Those people, by the way, really are great because they're going to respond to you. They're so flattered that you ask. They show up for the interviews. It's really great. I think it's no surprise that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Frankly, we got them within the first hour. Speed up your hiring process with ZipRecruiter. See why 3.8 million businesses have come to ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. Go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter free. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. You'll see how easy it is, how fast it is, and how quickly you get the right person. ZipRecruiter. It's the smartest way to hire. Thank you, ZipRecruiter, for supporting MacBreak Weekly. You support it when you use that address. That way they know you saw it here. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. Break. Goody. They started right at the beginning with Max. I love that. No, wasted no time to leap into the thing I care the most about. And we had heard that they might announce a MacBook Air 15-inch. Mm-hmm. And indeed they did. And the words that warmed me to the bottom of my heart, pre-order today, shipping next week.
Yeah.
I ordered immediately. And mine comes next Tuesday.
Nice. What color?
I have, like you, in fact, this is why I didn't really need this. I have the M2 Midnight Blue. Mm-hmm. But my daughter needs a new computer. That's my excuse. So I'm going to give, because she has a really old MacBook Air. So I'm going to give her this one. Mm-hmm. And I got the 15-inch, but I couldn't bring myself to get the Midnight because of the fingerprint problem.
Fair enough.
And at least I got a MacBook Pro that was silver, like old school. Uh-huh. And I thought, wow, I remember those days. I thought for nostalgia reasons,
I wished I had the silver one when I was at the event yesterday, because right as the event started, the sun was still beating down on us and this darker color was absorbing heat. So I had this on my lap. I put my hands on it, about burned my hands. Luckily, as the event went on, the sun moved behind us, so it wasn't as much of an issue. But Dan Morin had the silver one and I thought, oh, I wish I had that one.
I've also discovered it's very handy for blinding people with the keynote speakers with yeah. your laptop when you hold it up and show it to them. This is the, Andy, you coined this and I love this. The, what is it? Feature quilt?
Feature quilt.
Yes. I love that. It's a feature quilt for the, MacBook Air 15. It's MagSafe Touch ID. Really, actually, you don't even need this. It's exactly the same as the 13.3.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit bigger. And interestingly, I did some calculations. I was very pleased to see same dots per inch as the 13.6, which means
we were wondering.
I'm going to get an inch more. I'm going to get about 200 pixels more top to bottom. Mm-hmm. So that's an inch more. And I think it's a little more than an inch on the sides. So it will give me more real estate. I was worried that the dots per inch, pixels per inch were going to go down. And so it would just be bigger icons. But no, good news.
I think... honestly, also the best thing about this is that it resulted in the price drop on the 13.
Yeah, $100 off on the 13 and on the M1. Mm-hmm. So this is Apple's best-selling Macintosh and will continue to do so. I think the 15-inch, yeah. they're smart to do this. I think there will be a real market for it. They also are giving you a 10-core GPU, which was one of the things you had to do in an upsell, yeah, a build right. order for the 13.6 inch, and they're giving you the 6-speaker sound system that the MacBook Pro has. That was one thing I was unhappy with on the MacBook Air, was the sound wasn't great. And I missed, at least this MacBook Pro 14 sounds so good.
Oh, wow. I never listened to audio out of this thing.
Yeah, it really sounds good. 24 gigs of memory, the max. That's a little disappointing. 2 terabytes of storage.
That's when you go to the Pro, right?
Yeah, I think that they're making a pretty good separation between the Pro and the Air. The Air is great. It's got a lot of real estate. it's definitely not a pro computer. Like, no. It's not like, and I don't think we have any mistakes as pro users that we should be using an Air to do what we do.
But the M2 is so good. It's so good that you really can do a lot. I mean, I'm not going to do photogrammetry, but it's great for what most people do, right?
Yeah, I think that for most people who are not doing a lot of, you know, media and so on and so forth, I think it's going to be great. I think that, you
creating
know,
media, not viewing media, creating
media. Creating media, yes. 100%. Yeah. And so I think that the two extra Thunderbolt is very important. Anytime I'm on the road with a MacBook Pro, I use all of those ports.
Yeah. They're smart to limit the RAM and to limit the ports, because that's what makes it less than a pro.
And I would love to make the pro ones beefier. You know, I would love to add an eighth of an inch to it and have it last 50% longer or 100% longer. Cause when you're typing in numbers, it's 18 hours or whatever. But when I'm rendering in compressor or Cinema 4D, it's like 3 hours. And we definitely need, I think the Mac Pros, I'd love to see them get beefier and thicker and more powerful and have the Airs continue to hold that space so that Apple's not trying to do the same thing with both of them.
This is the GarageBand iMovie computer. You're looking at the Final Cut Logic computer. And that's the difference.
I'll be honest. Final Cut and Logic, I'm sure, would run for many small projects, would run just fine on the Air. Yeah. Where it becomes problematic is, again, when you start to do long renders, it's going to be heat. There's going to be some heat throttling there on long renders, as well as the lack of Thunderbolt ports is a big deal, because one of them is power, I think.
Yeah.
It has a
MagSafe. So it's MagSafe plus two. Weirdly, 18 hours battery life across the line. There's no improvement, even though you have more space. I'm thinking maybe that's why they have six speakers. Point,
like, make sure.
Yeah, the speakers, the 10-core base.
So do I need more battery or do I need more speaker? I want more speaker. I think that was a good 18 hours is plenty for me. And that's, they say you watching Apple
TV. If you're using
an
Air, I think it's fine. I think if you're using a Mac, again, because it's not, that's
well, good news.
Use case.
Guess what? They also updated the Mac Studios to massive horsepower, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the
M2 Ultra
Mac Studios look great.
Is the largest chip, 76 core GPU, 24 core CPU. Up to now, I have to say, for a pro, I've been told, I can't imagine this, 192 gigabytes of RAM is not enough.
It's pretty good. I mean, like, there's not that many people. I mean, well, when you get into really big renders and photogrammetry and other things like that, there's and science calculations. And so, so there's a bunch of things that you have to hold all in RAM at one time. And so 192 can be limited, but that market is crazy small. Like, there's one thing to be small market, and then there's to be a tiny, tiny little market that would need that much more RAM. But I do think that for the most part, 192 is a pretty, I mean, it's amazing. I had to write a 3-page paper to go from 128 megabytes of RAM to 192 megabytes of RAM, for Star Wars.
Megabytes.
And that's what I was rendering. You know, and so.
No, 192 is quite a bit.
So much.
And that's an important point. Somebody's saying, you mean of GPU memory? No, of unified memory. So that is a point, is that your GPU can use it.
That's stunning.
Yeah, that's a lot for a GPU.
Yeah.
They mention it on the feature quilt for the Mac Studios, but it's, I think, also true of all M2s. There's a neural engine. And the key on this is very interesting, because Microsoft, which is still stuck with Qualcomm and Intel, has been hurting because of this. They've been talking about NPUs for a long time. They coined the term neural processing unit, but only the Qualcomm chips have NPUs. They're waiting for this fall when Intel will announce Meteor Lake and put out an NPU-based Intel platform. So Apple has a real advantage, because all of their hardware now comes with a neural processing engine. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal, I think. Not for generating, you don't use it for generating models, but you use it for all of the kinds of things.
Running.
Yeah, it's kind of wild how much that, you know, even we looked at, and I can't think of his name, the law. Is it Moore's Law?
Yeah, Gordon Moore.
Moore's Law. Mm-hmm. When sort of modern computer architecture folks have tried to look at how to sort of keep that vision alive, they have turned increasingly to these neural engines as a way to sort of figure out how to bridge the gap between how much smaller we can now make transistors versus what we would expect to see according to Moore's law. And so, yes, it's every aspect of your use of the machine where that neural engine is trying to do things in a way that is smarter, which then makes it work faster, makes it process better.
31.6 trillion operations per second.
I can't fathom. How much is 31.6 trillion, right?
It's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking teraflops here. This is, you know, teraflops. This is incredible.
And by the way, the 8K playback, they talk about a lot of streams of playback. The 8K sounds esoteric until you think about the headset.
Yeah.
The headset is an 8K. Right.
There's two 4K screens.
8K solution.
Yep. Yeah. 800 gigabytes per second memory bandwidth on the Mac Studio. I have to say, I have the original Mac Studio, and I have never felt in any way harmed or hampered.
And I even have the one that's not Ultra, and I've never felt hampered.
No, I have a Pro. Lisa got the Max M1, and these are way faster than I need. So these are impressive. I didn't ask this. Did they increase the number of displays the MacBook Air could handle? No, they did not.
No, but I think it's still external. 6K. But yeah. It's a really, really good external display, like 6K.
Yeah, really good.
I'm sorry that Apple has beaten me down to this level, but I was so excited that it still has a headphone jack. Thank you, Apple, for not removing a headphone jack from my laptop.
Isn't that sad? The courage port is missing.
I still use one on my studio. I definitely still use one on my studio if I really need to figure out where the...
Use it? Are you kidding?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not using it right now,
I have an extension cable plugged into it. So if I need to, I can plug the headphones into it. Mm. The new studio will support up to six, count them, six Pro Display XDRs. I want six. Now, forget VR.
I dare you.
Forget Vision Pro. I'm going to spend 10 times as much. And I'm going to have I don't have to wear a helmet. I'll just sit down. It'll be great.
Well, I have six right now. I bet you do. The same computer, of course you do. But there's array.
Of course you do.
Again, the NORAD set at the end of War Games. That is my ideal. work setup.
I thought that was a good start.
So this studio really, for I would say the vast majority of people, is as much as one would ever need.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the only thing that you really, what you get with the Pro as you start to move up is the increased number of lanes of Thunderbolt and the PCIe's the slots, you know. So being able to add six cards for I/O and being able to have a lot more lot more lanes for the Thunderbolt are the big.
Well, I think this is important because yes, they finally said we have a Mac Pro. It's the same case, but it got a shrink ray a little bit. I can't tell. I couldn't tell. Did you see it?
Yeah, I actually got that. There's a video of that.
Is it
a
cute little toaster guy?
Supposed to wash it in cold, not warm.
It's about the size of a bread box.
Okay.
Bread box sized computer. I will say this, Apple.
See, it looks a little, it's definitely smaller next to the XDR display. That looks good.
It's like the new Mac 2 CI.
Yeah. It's really cute.
I love that computer.
Frog Design lost like the contract for industrial design and.
That I think is kind of a cool look at the internal.
And you can open it up. So this is I have to say, there isn't a lot of technical difference between the Mac Studio with the M2 Ultra and the Mac Pro with the M2 Ultra.
And that is on purpose. Apple, in talking with journalists, has positioned these two models as options. The M2 Ultra Mac Studio is meant to be the one for people, for companies or whomever, who don't want to do a lot of thinking. I need the machine that just does what I need it to do. You get it. It's all in one package. I should say thinking and tinkering.
Wait a minute. 134 billion transistors for people who don't want to do any thinking.
This is, yes. In trying to pick what they're after.
Outsource
you get
that,
this machine. It does what you need it to do. Whereas if you want to tinker, if you want to play around and purpose build exactly what you want, that's where the Mac Pro comes in. They're both fantastic machines. It's the choice between the two.
And I love that. I love what Apple did there, which is that we don't feel like we're getting less to buy a studio. We can break out the Mac Studio and have it be a great computer to do. If I'm doing 3D rendering, I feel like I can just go to the Mac Studio as easily as I could go to the Mac Pro. But if I need to do video I/O, then I know that I need the Mac Pro. I probably want the Mac Pro because I'm now going to
want all, like when I do a video production with my studio, like if I'm using Mimo Live and I, you know, wire all those things in, I'm using literally every port on the studio. Like it is every, there's a wire going into each one of those for the monitor outs, the camera ins, the, all the other things. You know, I would much rather, that's the kind of thing I'd rather do on a Mac Pro.
And so you are paying for that capability. So Keith 512 in our IRC configured a Mac Studio and a Mac Pro with the same base hardware, 24 core CPU, 60 core GPU, the maxed out RAM. And that's interesting. This, the Pro only goes to 192 gigs as well. He put a terabyte SSD in. Now, this is in the UK, so it was £5,799 for the Studio, £8,799 for the Mac Pro. So for those PCI 4 lanes.
And way more Thunderbolt ports.
Way more Thunderbolt ports.
And if you're, and it's again, if you know what you need, then you need that.
That's like a, it's a I lot have, more, but you're going
to
get
so in comparison many to the boxes. Intel Mac so Pro, which was what?
Yeah. I mean,
well, and that, yeah, by the way, $40,000 cheaper. You can stop comparing your Intel Macs with your Mac Apple Silicon Macs. Nobody's buying those, guys. Those are not.
They're still.
They're still selling them.
Yeah, I know they're selling. There are things that
like a discrete GPU. You want a Radeon card in there? Guess what? Right. You ain't putting it in the new Mac Pro,
or that much RAM, or you know, there's a couple of different things that one still does that the new one doesn't. So there's definitely reasons to have the Intel.
Yeah, no, I understand, but there's no reason to compare your performance to the Intel. That's just like hand waving.
I think they'll stop doing it now that
they can stop.
Yeah, because they've made it.
So the most expensive M2 Ultra Mac Pro is $40,000 cheaper, according to The Verge, than the maxed out Intel version. I think that's probably the RAM, because the Intel one would go to two and a half terabytes of RAM, right? It was a lot more.
Something insane.
Yeah, something insane.
But something
yeah,
really high.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's apples and oranges at that point. People, though. Tell me about this. This is the issue, I think. The discrete GPU, even though you have PCI bus on there, what can you put in those slots?
I mean, like video cards, you know, for one. So video and audio IO cards are IO. All things that you would.
It's for IO. So
I think that that's the, I don't know if that's the only market, but that's the biggest market. You can also put in more hard drive. You can put Apple's in solid state hard drive.
SSDs.
You know, so you can put in these very large NVMe cards that are like 32 terabytes or whatever that you can drop into there. So there's definitely some, but IO drive systems, network systems, you know, but things getting in and out of the computer. It's not going to do a GPU, which is unfortunate. I mean, a lot of us wish that we could put an NVIDIA card in because there's a bunch of like custom processes in the NVIDIA
card. You've got CUDA cores and you can't.
But that's never going to happen. So
yeah.
Give that up. So it's not that we don't want them. We just stopped thinking about it. So it's too far away.
Yeah.
But I think that it's, you know, you have an incredible workhorse of, you know, like, so for instance, we were talking about it this morning on office hours that Zoom, you know, if we could get enough bandwidth, we could pull 48 individual 1080p signals out of that computer with the cards. You just drop the cards in that we buy Sonnet boxes for right now. Mm-hmm. And you'd have one box pulling 48, and which sounds crazy unless you're doing a virtual event. You know, so if you're doing an event, you want to grab everybody and be able to jump between everybody and move around. Having all those ISOs might make sense. So those are things. But right now, there's other limitations. But it's
for a very specific. You know,
it absolutely is. Well, and it's going to be. Yes, it's going to be for it. What it should be is for a very specific group of people. But, you know, I live in Marin and, you know, there's a lot of Jeeps in Marin and they are all super clean.
They're not going off road.
There's no dents. No one's using that Jeep for the way. I mean, they have, and we're talking about the Rubicons. You know, there's a lot of Rubicons in Marin that are pristine, you know, and they even have all the rigs and everything else. So there's a market there for the folks that
I would buy for that case if I had more money than sense. That's a beautiful case. Exactly. It's that Johnny Ive cheese grater. It's gorgeous.
There's going to be like Hollywood producers that have it on their desk and you know,
exactly.
All that stuff,
Yeah. You can get the promise
one block of cheese on it.
The promise Pegasus R4i 32 terabyte RAID module for the Mac Pro.
Yeah.
plug it right in. That gives you 32 terabytes for $3,000. You know what? That's actually,
and that's the kind of thing.
Not bad.
It's a pretty good deal. And
less than the Vision Pro headset. Yeah.
You can put enough hard drive space into the computer that you can get yourself into an enormous amount of trouble. Like if it goes bad, you know, like it's like you know, I got 192 terabytes of drive space in there, and the whole thing goes south.
You know what? It breaks my heart. Disney just fired the woman who saved Toy Story 2. You know this story, right? Somebody accidentally deleted the renders for Toy Story 2. The movie basically was deleted. And then they went to the backups, and the backups weren't good because they had it misconfigured.
DLT.
They thought they were going to lose the movie, right?
Right.
Then somebody says, you know, I was bringing this home, working at home. I think I have all the files at home. She probably had the promised 32 terabyte. I mean, how big is Toy Story 2? Anyway, they rushed over to her house, put the computer like in a egg carton, you know, and brought it back and crossed their fingers because that's like years of work down the tubes. They saved Toy Story 2. This poor person, I think she's a woman. I'm judging from the name.
I believe so. I think she was on pregnancy leave either before or after delivering.
That's right. But
yeah,
that's why she was working at home.
That's what I recall. And of course, you know how the person who deleted everything, it was like the classic entering a certain line that says, I'll just delete everything from this folder. And then he puts a hyphen in there that shouldn't be there. Said, oh, no, do this recursively to every single volume that's attached. Like, oh, dear.
So yeah, Galen Sussman saved the movie in 1998 because she had it at home.
It's not the person who hit delete that was the problem. It was whoever builds an architecture
that allowed that
allowed one person to do it without turning two keys. You know, like it's
in addition, like backups doesn't mean you back it up and then you put the cartridge someplace. Like you periodically test your backup to make sure that your backups are good.
So there's a big screw up. Everybody had, sad to say. Now this was 1998. She was still at Pixar. Disney in their layoffs. I hope they laid off the guy who deleted the files anyway. But unfortunately, Galen Sussman is one of the people that has been laid off.
So. He's still at the company. He's still like buried underneath the concrete piling from the new campus where he's been for the past 13 years. Don't worry. He'll be at Pixar for a very, very long time. He'll outlast everybody.
Yeah. You'd think you'd have a job for life if you saved Toy Story 2, but okay. Yeah, it turns out it's only 25 years.
That's all you get.
So the Mac Pro is here. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. We can all stop thinking about it. The two Macs that were not updated, the Mac Mini, well, that just got updated. So I understand that. And I think there are probably a few people saying, where's my iMac?
We think that's continuing.
Is it over?
Yeah. I don't think it's a priority in any way, shape, or form.
You got the studio. Yeah. Well, Lisa, for instance, still uses an iMac in her office. It's getting flaky and old, and she wants a new one. I said, honey, you're not going to like the new one. It's not 27 inches. It's 21 inches.
And that's the whole thing. I think they have like, here's, people still want that, you know, and as long as it sells enough to make it worth it, I think they'll keep on releasing it. But I think that they definitely, the Mac Mini is in a different place now where it's much more modular. You can decide, you know, what you want. It's a lot less expensive. You know, the thing that really wears out is the screen and the screen size. And now you can buy a bigger screen for it. And I don't really think that, I mean, I just bought an iMac for my parents-in-law because they had one before and it's all in one place and you can plug it all in and it just works. And so I definitely see the value of keeping something like that around. But I think that for almost everybody, I think the Mac Mini makes more sense.
Can we just say that Apple's not going to make another one, or is they still somewhere back in the labs have a 32-inch?
I wouldn't be surprised if they don't do updates. I don't think getting a larger one, I very much doubt. I think it's 21 inches. It's going to be, you know, it's not going to get much. It maybe gets up to 24 at some point for whatever reason, but it's never going to be another big one.
Yeah.
It is going to be it's going to be an entry-level computer. They're not going to make a pro version of it. They've got too many other pro things that are out there. So I think that it's going to be a basic computer for kids that are going to school or folks that are retired and just want something that they can turn on.
It's going to be the computer you buy in 12 packs, either because you have a small company or a school classroom. No, I'm serious. Like
blister packs.
Otherwise, Apple. Anybody who comes into an Apple store looking for an iMac, there is a training video that says try to get them to buy a MacBook Air for God's sake.
A studio with a nice display. That's what I'm working on, Lisa. We'll get you a nice display. If we can get one that matches the other display you're using, we get a studio. You won't know it's not an iMac, but you'll be happier because mm-hmm. it's going to be modular. And it's going to be faster,
but it won't be yellow.
I mean,
yellow thing, one.
In Rwanda, we had some voltage issues and everything else going up and down. And over time, the iMacs, we got 40 iMacs.
Yeah, made sense.
Back in the day.
Yeah,
and repairing them was super expensive.
We should explain. He was teaching, so these were classes.
It was school.
Yeah,
school in Rwanda. Yeah, and the problem that we've had is that it's replacing them after the power supply or whatever. It's trying to fix an iMac.
You can't.
No. Non-trivial. And so for the same cost, if we had monitors instead, we could have just got another Mac Mini.
Actually, I think we're getting her a Mini, right, John? I think we're just going to get her a nice Mini.
They're really nice.
Yeah, they're fine. That's all she needs.
Yeah. You can have any big curve around monitor or anything else.
She has a 49 inch curve around monitor and then the iMac. So I think we may get a matching and now she's going to be in heaven.
Oh man, 249 inch
get two vertical side by side.
That's your vision.
Or if you had four of them, you could go two
can you
up.
Imagine
over. Yes, we're trying to put. That's what
I
just want to see a picture of it. I don't need it, but I just want to see a picture.
I'll tell you what I'm saving my money for. I'm not going to buy the Vision helmet. I'm going to buy the 49 inch QD OLED curved monitor. That somebody's selling. I can't remember if it's LG but that's the monitor, right? It's a, it's a gaming monitor, I guess.
Yeah. It's pretty.
Oh, that's what I'm saving my money for. MSI, I guess it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, Samsung too.
Wait, so there are more.
Yeah, I have a QD OLED TV, which is incredible. It's the brightest OLEDs out there. They're really gorgeous.
Kind of stunning.
So Samsung is going to make a QD OLED. It's the Odyssey OLED G9.
Available for $12,000.
You feel like you're getting a suntan?
I can't afford a G6, but I'm getting a G9.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
It's not available yet, but if it comes down to that of the Vision Pro, that's going to be...
Do you feel the heat from the screen?
No, QD OLEDs are not... they're not hot. They're nice.
We were at Cinegear, this big filming thing over the weekend.
They're not like plasmas.
They had like a wall of these lights, and they said we asked them. They said they get really bright, and they can you turn the whole wall on? And when they turned it on, it's like literally changed the temperature. Like we were standing like, whoa! It wasn't just that it was bright; it's a lot of heat.
So we got to talk about software. So that was the hardware. Mm-hmm. Are anybody buying any of that stuff? Anything? I'm the only one getting the 15 inch. I'll bring it in next week.
I'm not going to get the Pro right now, but I probably will get a Pro this year sometime.
If I like I said, that M1 Studio is really sweet still.
I mean, the reason that I got the Studio was, and I didn't go for the Ultra was I was like, oh, I'm going to buy this.
You knew you were going to buy the Pro.
Funny thing is that I'm going to buy the Mac Pro, but I'm not going to spend more than $12,000. Like literally that's what I said. I was like, I'm not going to get some $60,000 machine. And now I can't afford it right now, but maybe sometime later this year, I'll sell a kidney or something.
Well, let's configure Alex's Mac Pro, shall we?
Let's do it.
Let's put it all together.
It's fun spending other people's money.
order now. Mac Pro starts at 7,000.
I got some room. Let's see.
Let's see. We got some room. Right. All right. You probably want the $1,000 upsell on the processor.
I got the room. Okay.
Yeah, so 60 core GPU versus 76. I think you want the same. Now, RAM.
All of it.
Okay, it's only 60.
Rendering.
Now we're at 10,000. I hate to tell you.
I'm still under. And then you need to. So here's the deal. Is the mistake I made with the Studio is I bought 1 terabyte of drives. Yeah. And the drives are so fast that you should just get the 8.
The internals are fast. But remember, we can get that promise card.
I still don't think it's going to be as fast as the internal drive speed. Yeah.
So we put 8 terabytes of storage. You don't need the wheels.
Skip out on the $400.
Skip the $400 wheels. By the way, glad to see they kept the wheels. Yes. They kept the wheels. They're not cheap.
That's because they made a bunch of them.
That's all you need, right? And we're $11,799. That's nothing.
Now with taxes, I'd probably go over.
So well, let's see. I should just put this on my Apple card. That's practically free.
Oh, do you need
XDR? Well, I sure would like that. It's only $5,000. Oh, wait a minute. I need nanotextured glass.
Oh, no, I don't want
no.
it.
No.
No? Comes with a rag. Okay.
And because I don't get the monitor, I don't get this. I don't want the stand.
See, John, couldn't I? I'm thinking instead of having this crappy Lenovo, I could have an XDR display here on a Visa mount.
You can't touch it.
Oh, you can't touch it.
You can touch it, just won't do anything.
It just doesn't do anything when you touch it. So that
people were mad. I was really interested. So many people were mad that Apple didn't, you know, release the Vision Pro, but did not release a touchscreen Mac.
Oh, come on.
Come on, man.
Yeah, I don't want to touch my
Nobody,
Mac.
I swear to God, I have a lot of touchscreen laptops.
Yes, and they're all.
Never touch
them. I hate it.
Never even touch this one.
Oh, he touched it.
When I love it on my iPad with my keyboard and my
this.
iPad.
Can't touch this.
Love that. But I do not. I do not need it on my Mac.
No.
When I do use it, I enjoy it, but that's not something that I need all the time. I'll have to say that I think that one of the reasons why Apple decided to put those like downward firing cameras on the headset so you can do like touch controls like without having to lift your hands mm-hmm. is that they know that all of us would be jumping on them for every yes. time Apple yes. said people no the reason why we don't do touch screens on the Mac is people don't want to have to raise their hands right, to use right, the computers exactly. like ah damn right. I had an 800 word think piece all lined up.
We only have 15 more minutes in the show. Everybody stick your arm out. If you can hold it out for that 15 minutes.
Right.
I can't believe how many people are doing it.
Well, I want to know what I get if I do it.
Nothing. Nothing. Okay, you're going to touch screen Mac. iOS 17 looks good. In fact, you could actually, by accident, they put out the developer version for everybody. So be careful.
Yeah.
The public preview is next month. Is in July. I'm tempted. I don't want to get rid of Hey on Siri. Siri already is way over responsive. Just try saying
you
seriously.
You do have options. Okay, so you can choose if you want to keep it Hey, if you want to change
I'd like
it to
have
one.
It more than Hey. Like, oh, hey,
please
ooh,
listen
you,
here.
You, hey.
I would recommend that if you want to give this a go as the, you folks who are developers and who are developers.
Here is the host of iOS Today.
Do iPad OS, not iOS. Because Rosemary this morning had to completely restore her phone because of a bug in iOS before the show started.
She's using the developer edition.
Yeah, she's using developer betas for everything, of course. I haven't installed any yet. I'm usually a lot quicker, but I was there, so I just haven't had time.
Yeah.
I will not be installing, I think, this iOS 17.
I'll tell you what I want.
But iPad OS for sure.
I think the standby is cool, right?
Standby is really cool.
Android has had this if you use the Pixel stand. But
we're all trying to figure out what happened to the little, where's the stand?
Where did that stand come from? It's just some MagSafe thing. Any MagSafe stand would work. Sure.
Okay. But it looked like one specific.
It looked like I was waiting for them to say, and only $99. For this finely crafted aluminum MagSafe stand. So it turns your iPhone into a bedside. Actually, I guess the iPad too, into a bedside clock.
Yeah, it's not called standby on iPad though. It's just that you've got
you have that capability.
Customized lock screens and stuff. Yeah.
Name drop looks great to me. It's the way to exchange business cards. It goes along with contact posters. So you will now make a contact poster with your face or your avatar or emoji or whatever picture of your dog. It doesn't matter. Your name, contact information, and that could be your business card. And now you and I will meet, and I will tap my phone to yours.
By the way,
but only
stand is from 12 South, and it's available in the Apple Store.
Oh, 12 South makes good stuff. Yeah. So that is a real stand.
But only from the iPhone, right? So you'll have 12 South. Okay.
12 South is the maker.
Yeah, they make great stuff.
But how do you connect with your Android friends? No.
Oh, forget who uses Android.
Might as well be a green bubble. You might as well be a green bubble at that point.
All of this stuff is guaranteed to piss off Android users. I can tell
you.
You'll be sent it. So you can make now that you can always make stickers, which was a cool feature. You press and hold Micah's face and then drag it. And now I get a Micah head sticker.
Yep.
But I can now do it with a live picture, right? So that he could be moving.
And none of that works between iOS 17 and iOS 16 because Rosemary is trying to send me a bunch of them this morning. So
even
you'll have to wait.
So green bubbles are everybody who except iOS
exactly.
17. Okay. I think that's cool. Live voicemail with transcriptions.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Nice.
One of the best features of the Google Pixel.
I have to tell you, so this is an
Duo,
interesting...
right? It's the Duo program that does that.
Interesting I learned yesterday about that live voicemail feature is Apple is kind of spoofing this. It is something that happens locally on the device. And what is happening is the phone is essentially answering the call and then transcribing with the voice, like it plays your voicemail back and transcribes the conversation that takes place. And if you choose to hit answer, then all it's doing is letting you into the call that it's already taken.
Otherwise, it has to do that.
So that way it doesn't have to involve the carrier. Exactly. Yeah.
Makes it on device. I think that's fine.
I think it's a good thing.
I think that's how Google
does it. It's a pro, not a con. Yeah.
Yeah. They've added, ladies and gentlemen, the application you've all been waiting for. Journal. it's kind of like day one, but it's a health thing, right? It's going to have prompts.
Yeah.
It's going to say, be grateful. What are you grateful for today? That kind of thing.
I like that it can look through your whole system and the activities that you're doing. And so I can imagine, we go to an undisclosed location where they show us what it's like to make sound for movies. I don't know what that is.
Don't know where that would be, but.
And it's like, hey, you recently went to this place. What was that experience like? And then I get to write about having that. That's kind of a cool idea with the journal.
I love that idea. Mm-hmm. So even better prompts. Even better, they made an API.
Yes. So
I love that. So day one can add this feature or other journaling apps. Health is also much improved, it looks like. In fact, health comes to the iPad.
Finally.
No calculator for you. Widgets on the iPad. That's going to be interesting.
Especially since
exactly. They're interactive, and also the fact that you can build a widget one place, and basically now, congratulations, the widget for your app can now be deployed on the watch, can be deployed on the phone, can be on the desktop, can be out here and there. The value of creating a widget for your app just went up by like 300%.
For safety, I think the check-in feature is great.
So here's what's amazing about this. I was talking about, as I always do, I used to be worried about you going into a ditch. And so
made a shortcut. Matthew made a shortcut.
For sharing your ETA, right? Yeah. But here's the thing about share ETA. I can see your dot and follow you along as you're going. And when I think about people who are out in the world, they might be going places. Maybe they're friends. They don't feel comfortable sharing their exact location, but they would feel comfortable if in an emergency their location was shared. That's where check-in is different from what you have right now, because check-in will keep everything private unless you're in a situation where you need to, at which point then it will share your location and information like how much battery life you have left. I think this is a fantastic feature. We've seen a few third-party apps try to do something like this, but not quite succeed at this level. So I can't wait for this to come out because I know that I would feel more comfortable using this with some folks where I wouldn't want to full-on just give them my location.
Yeah, that's a big deal. You just tell this feature, I expect to be home by 9 p.m. When that doesn't happen, it'll try to contact you. If you don't respond, the people that you've set up to be notified by this get, like Micah said, not just your location, but hey, here's your last time that you touched the phone. Here's your battery status. Here's your cell phone status. Here's your Apple Watch status, so that you can get all this stuff together. One thing I've asked Apple about this, haven't got a response back, is I want to know what if one of your emergency contacts does not have an iPhone or does not have an iPhone that is running iOS 17? Are they SOL or is it something where it will send it sends out an SMS if it is received by the version of iMessage that runs on iOS 17? It gets redesigned as one of these beautiful graphical sort of displays of what's going on. Because that would be quite a kick in the teeth if they said, yeah, we don't want you to be rescued by anybody who has Android. We feel as though that's a good way to pressure that friend, if they really want to save your life, to have an iPhone.
That is a good question.
If you cared, you would get an iPhone if you really cared. Thank you, Scooter X, pointing out that little subtle thing, but Apple, which has always charged $99 to be in the developer program and required that you be in the developer program to use the developer betas, has now lifted that requirement. So the free version, just sign in with your Apple ID, continues to give you Xcode and all of that, but you also get OS beta releases.
Oh, interesting.
That's a new dot on the comparison list. So thank you, Scooter X, for pointing that out. I think they should. That's great. Apple wants to get people on the bus. You're either on the bus or you're off the bus.
I have to say, the thing I was most excited about are audio message transcriptions, because here's my problem. I love sending audio transcriptions, but I hate receiving audio transcriptions. I do too,
because you have to listen to them.
Or audio messages, yeah. Exactly, you have to listen to them. I'm like, I don't want to type something out, so I'll happily send them. But
so usually what I do is dictate it, but I think it's nice to have. I wonder if the Memoji audio will also be transcribed.
As podcasters, we're very happy to send our voice to people, but my little brother is notorious for sending me 6-minute long
audio messages. Oh, do the youngs do that now? I was wondering. Yes. Yeah.
And I don't want, I'm usually doing something else.
Yeah.
So I just want to be able to read it real quick and see, oh, that's what he wants. I can respond super quick. So I'm really, whenever they announced that feature, I almost did a woo.
Well, the audience sounds like they were fairly vocal.
So the press was mostly non-vocal,
as
we should be. And we were, you know, and so it's funny, I was asking the question, what almost made you clap? Because that's kind of what you had to do. But the developers, of course, were very vocal. And then that section between where there was the Apple folks, obviously very vocal. But yeah, it was only on occasion where you'd get the sounds like the price of the Vision. A few jokes that came up. The name of that feature where you share your contact, the name drop feature, that got a lot of laughs. That was called Name Drop. And then some of the stuff, like a few of the stickers, were funny to people.
Good. Yeah. Let's see. What else do we have? AirDrop will let you. That's the contact thing, I guess.
Well, but also, I love this. If I'm sharing a video with someone and I need to leave before I can.
AirDrop in the cloud.
AirDrop in the cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I should also mention, since I'm here, if you want a more in-depth look, Rosemary Orchard and I covered all iOS and iPadOS this morning.
I should have mentioned that. Yeah. We're just rehashing. So that's where we're going to move very quickly. Anything in the iPadOS 17 you thought was worth? I love it that we're going to have widgets, interactive widgets, which means we can.
And lock screen customization.
And lock screen customization finally comes to the iPad.
But yes, those interactive widgets, this is great on both iPhone and iPad, because more and more we're getting to the state where we don't necessarily need to open up an app, wait for it to load or whatever it happens to be, and be able to access it. That right there on my, it's almost like it's making it more Mac-like, because my desktop is what I'm looking at instead of a home screen.
Right.
And I can interact with these little things. And I mean,
that's how it should be. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Rosemary, I mentioned her name, was very excited that she could put shortcuts in the widgets on
100%
the desktop.
Excited about that. Unfortunately, that's another thing that's not working right now on iOS. So her shortcuts app won't even open. So crash. She's waiting for that.
But Notes is getting much more. Thing. Go ahead, please. Andy. Yes, please.
One really big thing that I really, really wanted for a long time, iPadOS 17 now supports external cameras. So you can plug in a webcam and actually use it.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
That's great.
Absolutely.
That's
cool. It was in the State of the Union yesterday, and I've also seen other people talking about it.
I FaceTime on my iPad almost all the time, and it's really weird because it's sideways and the camera's over there, so I'm never looking at the camera. So an external camera would be very nice.
When I'm traveling on a Tuesday, that's the only reason why I have to take my damn MacBook with me instead of just iPad. Now I can actually take this and my external.
Health comes to the iPad. We mentioned that. Much improved PDF features. I mean, basically, you won't need a third-party PDF app anymore.
Yeah, I feel kind of feeling for a lot of those third-party apps.
And Notes is really, they keep improving Notes. Notes is getting better and better.
Trying to make it a little bit more like these tools, what Logsec and others.
PKM tools, they call them, personal knowledge management tools. You know what they didn't do a lot of? Hype and Stage Manager.
Yeah, as you said, though, it got a few improvements. I will say, so Christopher Lawley, who has been a guest on iOS today and is like the stage manager guru, he nearly stood whenever they said they made improvements to Stage Manager. Whatever a lot of people are griping about who use Stage Manager, one of the things is sort of whenever you take a window and you try to move it around, it would sort of jostle everything around the place. They fixed that. So that was exciting. And I forgot to mention in Notes when we were talking about the Logsec thing, one thing that they didn't announce, I believe on stage, but was in the little details, is that you can link between notes. So one note can link to another one. And that's really that personal knowledge management feature.
They're getting, Notes. It's good. It's too bad it's not cross-platform. That's the biggest downside to that. But if you live in the Mac and the Apple ecosystem,
I guess technically, because you can access it in the web.
I've actually got Grab Notes when I need to go to PC and logged into iCloud to grab onto them.
Oh, okay. Good.
I don't have to do that very often, but it knows it. For those of us who are mostly 99% dealing with the Mac, it is super powerful. Like it, I use it. It's like, yeah, thanks
for all the time. Emmerich is saying classical music for iPad is now in the App Store.
Oh, good.
Yay. Andy and I are happy. Biggest news of the whole event.
Yes.
Mac OS
Sonoma.
We are probably unjustifiably excited about that because we are, in fact, in Sonoma County.
I was so excited, and I was thinking about you all, and I thought, I bet they're very pumped to hear that.
So excited.
People were kind of poo-pooing it where I was, and I thought, hey, well, listen.
The way they led up to it, you know, Craig Federighi did his dad jokes about his crack team and all that. But the way they led up to it said they were going to wine country. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, crap, they're going to name it Napa.
Oh, I, for some reason, from the beginning, I thought it's Sonoma. So, well, I was really excited.
Napa gets all the press, all the attention. And here we are in little old Sonoma Valley just next door. So I was very pleased that Apple gave us that. And our wine is better. Other things in Sonoma. I like that name. Screensavers. Did people laugh?
People said, rest in peace, Ariel. Because the, I don't know if you all know, that's the...
That's what I use Sherlock on my Mac. Yeah.
Which basically did this, the TV.
This is even better, though, there. Because they're going to... They apparently added a bunch of new wallpapers, all of which become alive.
And that's the thing, is that they turn into your wallpaper, which is... Yeah, it goes from the lock screen to the wallpaper. Exactly.
I love that. They have a bunch of stuff for Safari. Who cares?
Oh, okay. But profiles in Safari, I think, is actually kind of neat.
That's why you're here.
This is why I'm here. I don't know if you folks feel that way, but I'm a Safari user, and that's one of the things that I did like about Chrome and about a few other browsers that exist out there are switching between profiles. So I was excited about it.
Yeah.
They're also doing sharing of logins and passwords. So if you have a family that all uses the same Netflix pack,
yes.
You don't have to basically sync between them.
That makes Apple Keychain is getting closer and closer to full-fledged password manager. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's one of the last things that was still missing is the ability to share. Yeah. That's actually quite huge. I will use that because Lisa's on a Mac. I'm on a Mac. She is still using LastPass. I'm using Bitwarden, so I can't share through our password manager, but we both have Macs, so I can share through Keychain.
Yes.
They're doing something similar with the Find My Network, you can have an AirTag that can be found by multiple people in your family or in your group, which is nice because, okay, that's great. Cause maybe you and your spouse are equally invested in finding out where your suitcase wound up. But it's like, if there is a warning when you activate it saying, okay, by the way, that means that if a family member has put one of these tags with you without your knowledge, it's not going to alert you that there's an AirTag following you because this is your AirTag. So make sure that you're not in a stalky sort of situation. So, but that's unavoidable, I suppose.
We were talking about that on Twitter on Sunday. A lot of spouses turn the Find My on. Lisa and I have it on. So I know, if she's delayed, I could look, she's not still at work. I don't have to start dinner or whatever. Those, I think if you trust your spouse and you're not worried about them stalking you, I think that's a good safety feature. And actually Apple has really enhanced that to some degree, which is great. But I agree with you. Only do it if you really trust the other person. You do have, web apps. Now, this was one Safari thing that I wanted to know more about. And in fact, I'll have to watch the track on this because Apple's been laggard on progressive web apps, which is a standard from Google and Microsoft. And without Safari participating fully, PWA was kind of DOA. It sounds like Apple is now turning it on, but they didn't say PWA. So I'm not sure if it's an Apple feature, thing that's not progressive web apps or what.
I don't know. It hooks up nicely with the feature where now if you have a website that is a web app, you can now actually have it as an app in the dock.
Yep. So and notifications. Right. So they're clearly providing some services. I'm going to have to look into it in more detail.
It really does feel like what you can do on iOS just brought to Mac OS, which is essentially wrapping it in its own window.
That's not so special, frankly. That's not progressive web apps. But the fact that they can do notifications, I don't know, maybe we'll see.
Yeah, they brought that to iOS first,
right?
With notifications.
Live stickers also come to Mac OS?
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. I guess so. Mac OS is compatible with 2019 iMacs and later, 2019 Mac Pros and later, 2017 iMac Pros and later, Mac Studios, obviously, the MacBook Air from 2018 or later. So it has to be a fairly recent Air. Looks like, in fact, Do you have to have Apple Silicon? I'm wondering now. Mac Mini 2018 or later, MacBook Pro 2018 or later. So a lot of older hardware now left in the dust when it comes to Sonoma.
Anything? Sunset continues to cross the meridian.
Well, if you want to run game mode, then you obviously need a newer machine.
Yeah, game mode. Yeah. Woo.
Well, see, it's not only game mode, but they've also, for developers, they've actually added a whole suite of tools for converting Windows games to Mac, and it's really, really quite a rich environment.
Yeah, so they're trying to. Cool. Christina was talking about that, and I thought it was very interesting. They have effectively released DirectX 12 emulation for the Mac. Now they say it's a way for game developers to evaluate whether they can port their game to Metal. Mm-hmm. But in fact, they have, and they are using Crossover or Wine. They're actually contributing to an open source project, but in a weird backhanded way through Homebrew, the ability to run DirectX 12 games in emulation on a Mac. That's very interesting. Christina Warren noticed it and started posting it. Here's a actual video. It says Apple hid something amazing for Mac gaming at WWDC. And so Apple was actually showing Windows games running in Rosetta in DirectX 12. What? So yeah,
that's a pretty big deal. It'll convert your renders. It'll convert your shaders. It's ambitious. So let's see if Windows gamers, game developers fall for it.
I will actually give credit to the great Andrew Tsai, who noticed that he is an Apple developer. Developed SpamSiv, which is one of the great spam tools. I think it's that Andrew Tsai. So his video discovering this is a big deal. And I think it's very interesting. I suspect we'll see some open source crossover on this. This was huge for Linux when the Steam Deck supported Proton for cross compatibility. Suddenly, all these Windows games ran beautifully on Linux. And I think this could be actually huge for Apple Silicon. As somebody who likes to play games, I'm excited.
Me too. Yeah. It likes to play games and has a Mac Studio. You know what I mean?
Right. You'd be great. Nice. And a nice screen. let's see. They talked about...
In Mac OS as well, you can finally, with both the Studio Display or the iPhone, actually control the composition when you're using that center stage feature. Finally. Jason Snell, when he heard this,
you can
glory,
tell
hallelujah.
You could say, look to your left, look to your right.
Yeah, you can choose how the zoom and pan happens. Before, it was just automatic to try to recenter you, but it's sometimes kind of odd.
Oh, yeah.
So now you can choose between wide and ultra-wide.
Maybe they did that because they also showed how you can do FaceTime on your Apple TV using Continuity Cam.
That feature I'm so excited about. Ever since I moved here, every Thanksgiving and Christmas, I do this strange iPad dance with my family back home who only have iPhones. And so they're trying to hold an iPhone and pass it around, and I'm getting sick looking at the iPad as they're passing it around. So the idea it'll require a little support call to get them to get it set up. But once that's done, we'll be able to have them up on the screen as we sort of celebrate our Christmas from a distance.
Yeah, I FaceTime my mom every week, and I could put her on our big screen in the living room.
Wouldn't that be nice?
And have the camera over by the kitchen, and we can have Thanksgiving.
And great. There's a session. This is exciting. There's a session at WWDC right now talking about using something called DockKit that will let developers interact with motorized docks for the iPhone. So what we're thinking
is... Oh, I have one of those motorized docks.
Uh-huh. So you thwack your iPhone onto this MagSafe dock, and then you can FaceTime from the television, and the dock can move with you as you're moving around your space.
Okay. I see something here in video conferencing called a bubble overlay, although I wrote bubble loverlay, and I think that was Freudian.
The bubble loverlay is...
I don't know what that is.
I'm kind of annoyed by this because they took this from iOS Today. No, I kid.
It was your idea.
Rosemary Orchard and I, when we do our show in the morning, we have,
you have a bubble overlay
of ourselves, often overlaid over the iPad so that we can show what's on the screen but also still appear on the screen. Apple's being a little bit more clever because it's using a lot of the features, the true depth and everything, to kind of cut you out so you're almost overlaid a little
bit. They showed like your full size with your PowerPoint or your keynote, sorry,
yeah,
behind you.
And then that's the other thing is that, yeah, you can go from this small bubble overlay.
I loved that.
Or sorry, bubble loverlay to the bigger version that, yeah, has these multiple layers. And in macOS, there's going to be a new picker option that lets you choose specific apps that you want to show in third-party conferencing apps. So instead of using Zoom itself to say, I want to show just this window or I want to show just this app, you can go into the little green plus icon and say, show this app or like Safari or this window in Zoom and then use my bubble overlay, et cetera, et cetera.
This was part of a segment they called Audio and Home. Mm-hmm. Which was a little weird. It was like, we got all these loose pieces.
Yeah, just where do we put them?
Shove them in there. But there was one that I thought was really interesting. I've kind of come around on the AirPods Pro. They're more comfortable. They actually sound really good. Mm-hmm. And Kevin Toefel, who does the IoT show with Stacey Higginbotham, talked about how he uses them as kind of ersatz hearing aids. Now, Apple, we thought for a long time, was probably interested in this category, especially now that over-the-counter hearing aids are legal. They talked about something with their AirPods that I think really is exactly what hearing aid users want. They call it adaptive audio. They've always had noise canceling, and they've always had transparency. Now, it'll slide between them. Mm-hmm. So I'm walking down the street, and there's a jackhammer, it'll turn down the sound. But even more importantly, you come up and say hi, it will turn down the background and focus the sound on you. That's what you want a hearing aid to do. Hearing aids are all about intelligibility of speech. I think this is, I can't wait to use this. Yeah. I think this might be, and what Apple, it really looked like, is trying to get everybody to do is wear your AirPods all the time.
Cause then, yeah, you can wear them more often. And then on top of,
you have a chance of losing them.
Yeah, that's true. On top of those features, also understanding the behavior of when I listen to podcasts, I typically have my volume here. When I watch movies, my volume's here. When I listen to Beyonce, it's here. Whenever I listen to the Strokes, it's here. And then be able to, you know, move between those different volumes automatically.
Does it know that from location?
It knows that from behavior.
The content.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Depending on the content.
That's very cool. Your memories can now be a screensaver on your Apple TV. I'll be using that.
I am actually very excited about that, except I already can imagine.
Yeah. Well, it could go away. Yes. Depends what you remember.
You just want to be careful what you remember. Yeah.
Don't turn your bubble loverlay into a memory, because you're going to have.
Keep your bubble loverlay to yourself.
Problems.
Yes.
Locate Siri remote.
Exactly. Oh.
This is it's halfway between what we want and what we need, or between
how was that in the remote and we weren't given that earlier?
I wonder.
So the idea is apparently they have a UWB chip in the Apple TV remote we never knew about, because you can now aim your phone and say
But let me be clear. This is my understanding from speaking with a few folks is that it's not using UWB. Instead, it is, because of the advances in Bluetooth, it's a little bit better at determining the signal of the Bluetooth and using that. It doesn't do an arrow. So all it does is, so
I thought maybe they were having the remote emit an inaudible high-pitched scream. And
the bubble gets bigger or smaller, but there's no arrow, unfortunately.
So it's closer or farther.
It's closer or farther.
Okay, so that would make sense. Bluetooth strength then.
Yeah. I wish it was more than that, but unfortunately it's not. And then the great savior of relationships everywhere is that you and whomever is in your vehicle that you're allowing to. Oh,
this is going to cause problems.
But okay, so I actually asked about this because I thought this share needs play to be opt out.
With the CarPlay.
Share play in the car, yeah. And I thought this has got to be opt out. So that
somebody in the back seat can change the music.
Mm-hmm. If you allow them to.
But you have to allow them to.
And this is why I like this, is because I'll talk about how it works for me right now, which is if I'm in the passenger seat, my partner's driving and there's a song I'd love to listen to. I say, can I please add a song to the queue? And he says, okay. And I say, okay, well, and I hold up his phone to his face while he's driving just to the side. So it unlocks and I can add a song to the queue. Now I can just do it on my own phone. And interestingly, only the person who is connected to CarPlay needs to have an Apple Music subscription.
Oh,
So you can still DJ even if you don't
have a driving subscription. Mm-hmm. Lisa's in the passenger seat. It's my phone that's playing music. Mm-hmm. What we've always done in the past is she's had a pair, you know, we switched the CarPlay over to her. Mm-hmm. But now she could just SharePlay over to my phone and play her crappy Lady Gaga music.
Or just add to the queue.
Okay.
You know, so it's temporary.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. She likes Beyonce. That's tvOS 17. That's watchOS, whatever, 10, I think. Some new features in watchOS. Snoopy
and Woodstock.
So cute.
I just got to point out.
That's fine.
That Charles Schulz, Peanuts, Santa Rosa, Sonoma County. There's somebody spending a lot of time up here now on the Apple team. I just want to say. I'm thinking Craig Federighi's got a palace up here or something.
It's always like a Peanuts. Curb your enthusiasm for kids.
Isn't it? I never thought of that. Yeah, it's Snoopy.
The football thing. You know, like it's
yeah. No.
You know.
Yeah, Lucy is absolutely Larry David. You now have if you play tennis or golf, your watch, it's on your wrist. We'll notice how you're swinging. Mm-hmm. There's features for cyclists, which
that was pretty intense. I mean, I was really curious about that. That I think that there's a lot. If it's really accurate, the amount of data that you're getting for sports is
serious. Cyclists already have this. They already have a dashboard and a Garmin watch, and they're already doing all of this. But if you're not a serious cyclist,
you're an in-betweener.
Yeah, you're getting something new. Yeah.
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 I was really excited about the two hiking things, topographic maps coming to maps on Apple Watch. That's really cool.
And so you'll know what the altitude is before you go there.
Yeah, exactly. And B, I think that it's helpful in trying to determine, I know I got lost, but how do I get back? And that's paired with the new Wayfinder points so that it will tell you.
You can leave breadcrumbs.
Exactly. The last time you had a cellular connection, and then not only just the last time you had a cellular connection on your cellular service, but then it'll add a second waypoint that is the last time you had the availability to place an emergency call, which is available on any carrier. So even if your carrier doesn't reach as far, obviously you can place an emergency call on any carrier. So it'll show you that waypoint as well. I thought that was awesome.
Nice. So benefits to hikers, bikers.
Oh, and then widgets are glances kind of on watchOS.
They brought glances back, mm-hmm. really. So that you can now, if you start a timer, you can scroll up and you'll see the timer and so forth. Yeah. I think that's
a huge step forward. That's exactly what I want to use that watch.
Exactly. A little better than glances.
Because again, we don't want to hold our arms up all day.
Right.
Yeah.
They have brought mental health to the watch.
Mm-hmm.
It's about time.
Yeah, more than they have in the past, at least. There's just some new kind of, I would say it's almost just more new categories for what was all once sort of categorized under mindfulness.
Be grateful.
Yeah, it's that's all. Got gratitude.
And that's the part of the feature that says, you've only been in outside for 30 minutes. You need to go outside for another 90 minutes or something.
Which I did like how they broke that down. I did not realize that being in sunlight was helpful.
Oh, you didn't know that?
Myopia. No, I knew obviously the change in vision, and I knew looking
They've always said that you should look at a variety of focal lengths.
But yeah,
so people who are glued to screens or wearing helmets should really get out there and look at the mountains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, myopia is largely hereditary, but the thing that is not hereditary that's connected to those screens that they didn't talk about was macular degeneration. And that is what a lot of people are really worried about related to our screens. It's why a lot of people turn their screens in night mode all the time on unless they want to watch something that they care about. And it's why.
So tell me that.
No one wants to talk about that.
Is it the brightness of the screen that's in?
It's the blue light. When you're in a dark area.
Because I'm in the macular degeneration zone.
There are a number of new studies about blue light's damage to retinas.
And of course, these screens all have a lot of blue light, more than sunlight.
It's odd that everyone started moving to dark mode and everybody started, you know, having these things. And no one wants to talk about the fact that macular. I had a long discussion with my ophthalmologist about it.
Oh, and they were very interested. Yeah.
And they were like, that thing we're worried about is the macular degeneration, which, you know, which you and I need to get checked on.
Right. Although I have heard you can exacerbate myopia. Kids who read a lot and things like that can make myopia worse. That's just nearsightedness.
See, we have a whole theory. Trey Radcliffe and I were trading notes on this on Twitter. That we have a whole theory that a couple hundred years ago, you were just mostly blind. You know, like if you're myopic, so you had to be very crafty.
Yeah, that's why we're smart. So
we had to be very crafty because we're the only ones that survived. Yeah, we're the ones that couldn't see very well. We had to do something. That's our whole theory. That's the theory that I want.
The watch will support name drop, which I think is really cool.
I forgot
cool.
to mention. Yeah.
I can come up to you and we can do our watch.
It's really a watch bump instead of a fist bump.
A watch bump. That might be the new thing. So watchOS would be great.
It was activated by fist bump.
Yeah. That would be so cool. Yeah.
There was, by the way, many years ago at CES, IBM had a technology. They put a computer in your shoe and then use its capacitance.
Did you kick somebody?
No, you would shake hands and in the capacitance and the contact.
Wait, so you had to run a wire all the way down to your shoe?
I don't know how it worked. But you would shake hands with somebody else wearing the IBM foot shoe.
Right.
Not the shoot foo, the foot shoe. You shake their hands. And a bumper lover light would appear over your head. No. And you would exchange business cards.
I love it. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Let's make it again.
Well, they were trying to, and this is it.
This is it.
Only right. Done right. Again, Apple, good job.
What were you saying, Andy?
Oh, no. I was just going to say that lockdown mode, since we're talking about watchOS, lockdown mode now also extends to watchOS. So you can block, if you lock down your phone, you can also lock down your watch as well. So, and if you feel as though you're being targeted by like national surveillance agency and that your phone or devices are being hacked to get access to your messages and contacts and stuff like that, the watch used to be vulnerable to that. Now, the exact same lockdown mode that goes into the phone now applies to the watch.
And it's on Mac OS and everywhere.
I think I'm getting punchy. I think, is there any?
did you hear something that was?
No, I said foot shoe. I meant shoe computer.
Well, wait.
I believe all shoes are designed to go on your feet. I might be wrong on that.
A hot shoe doesn't go on your shoe.
Oh,
show title.
Foot shoe? Question mark.
What am I talking about? Does anybody have anything else? I mean, this was a long, there was a 2 hour and 6 minute presentation. We've gone almost the same length of time, actually a little longer. Anything we've missed?
I'm trying to think if there's anything really that stuck out to me or that I heard about afterward.
This was one of those events where, and we really didn't expect this, Apple updates almost all their Mac hardware. We really didn't expect something like that.
Yeah.
In fact, there was a lot of conversation leading into it that I was having with the other folks about how, oh man, if Apple takes the time to announce all of these Macs, it's all going to be overshadowed by the headset. So why would they announce the headset? Yeah. We mostly talked about the headset. A lot of people are mostly talking about it. And so it was kind of interesting that they still chose to announce the Macs here as opposed to just doing one of those press release and send out the review units.
Somebody's in the chat room said, "Don't forget, your autocorrect's not going to duck you anymore
because of new Transform."
I was just about to say, I'm amazed that there's so many like pieces written about this. I was on WGN Radio in Chicago this morning, and the host said, "So I understand that now I can cuss on iOS on my iPhone," and I'm like, "Say what?" Think about what do you mean? You can always cuss
this on CNN.
The iPhone's ducking autocorrect problem finally gets fixed.
The problem. So can I type the other word now?
It means that now it's better at like remembering that, oh, you tend to use this word a lot, so I'm not going to autocorrect this word that's not in my dictionary.
Logan Roy will say
the improved autocorrect based on a transformer machine language model.
And it's arguably less prudish because even if you, there were a bunch of ways that you could try to get it to do it in the past so that it would just leave you alone and it wouldn't. And now in the change to the transformative model, it
all right. also adjusts. Any guesses as to which Apple executive demanded that?
Oh, I can imagine. I can ducking imagine.
Anything else we've missed? It was I thought a very interesting event. I was so glad not to hear the letters 5G or AI.
Oh my God, 5G
anywhere in it. There was a lot of AI in it, large language models, machine learning, but not AI specifically. And I think it's interesting that where the rest of the industry has turned away from VR and AR, you know, look at Meta. They went, what? There's like, that's that meme with the guy going by with the girl. And Apple is, you know, keeping their eyes on the prize. They're again, sticking with is, the one that brought them.
This is, you know, both of these, both Google and Apple, like five, six, 7 years ago said, you know what? We think that this thing that we're going to invest a kajillion dollars in is going to be like the lifeblood of the company in the 2020s and 2030s. And one of these people is probably going to be right. And we shouldn't guess that it's going to be Google. We shouldn't guess it's going to be Apple, but oh my God. So I feel as though both of these companies cannot have made the exact same right decision though.
If you think I was critical of the Vision Pro, you ought to hear me talk about AI.
We do.
I'm turning into Dvorak, actually, I think. I'm just negative on everything. I don't think either one is going to change the world, but we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, as an Andy Anatko, again, I get a lot of emails. It's like, oh, are you being personal about me? Or are you saying AI, not as big a deal as
I like you, AI. You're the good AI.
Thank you very much. I probably am not going to turn against humanity and be the destruction of all that is good and holy on this planet.
But don't give them the nuclear codes anyway. Just in case.
You know, don't be mean, okay? I mean, I some days I'm just right there on the edge.
He's going to blow. You know what I mean? He's going to blow. Alex, anything, final thoughts? You obviously were very excited about everything you saw yesterday.
I think it was solid updates for the stuff that we expected. I think that the headset is actually more than I expected, from a version one. So I think that it's got some pretty good, it's got some legs. So I'm looking forward to the fall or the, you know, it's good.
Yeah. I'm very excited about my 15 inch.
I'm excited. Overlay. I'm excited for you.
Can't wait to get that. Andy, it sounds like you were reasonably approving of everything
that
Apple talked about.
In one maybe verbose sentence, I wasn't prepared to judge it based on anything that Apple was going to show off today. However, I don't think they made any huge mistakes. I think to the extent to which a virtual reality ski goggle type headset can succeed in 2024, 2025, I think they've set themselves up nicely, but again, we're going to find out in January, February what they're actually delivering and what the experience is actually like. Yep. But again, I don't, nothing that I can rag on them about. Not that I was setting them up for that, but I think that I was very, very pleased with yesterday's announcements.
Micah, you're glad you were there?
Glad to have been there for the things I learned and sort of post keynotes. And more importantly, just very excited to dig into these developer sessions and learn more. That's where the meat of it is going to be.
I agree.
There are a lot of sessions I've been eyeballing. Like, oh, I got to see more about that. So
yeah,
you'll hear more about that soon.
Good. Yeah. Godspeed, because I don't think I'll be able to get through all of those. But glad you're, you know, the young people today.
That's what we're here for.
They got the energy. We're going to take a break. Come back with your picks of the week in just a second. Our show today brought to you by Melissa. Melissa. Oh, I've talked about them before. The address experts. The leader in global data quality, identity verification, and address management solutions. Actually, some, you know, good news, a little pat on the back, Melissa, because the Clean Suite and Data Quality Suite from Melissa have just once again been named leader by G2, which is a leader itself in peer-to-peer software, in the 2023 Data Quality and Address Verification Spring Report. Good going. They will also, that mean that's not all, named Momentum Leader, High Performer, across the small business, mid-market, and enterprise segments. They were named good partner and easiest to do business with. Yes, I can vouch for that. We always love talking to Melissa. Easiest setup, highest user adoption, easiest admin. Well, that's a bunch of reasons to check out Melissa. Along with leader status, Melissa ranked highly in the price category for Clean Suite and Data Quality Suite across many segments. And I think that that's a real testament to Melissa's strong belief that data quality should save you more money than it costs you. You know, that you should have a positive ROI. And you really do. You know, on average, poor data quality costs an average of $15 million a year. So Melissa's affordable, high-quality solutions for data quality and address verification not only save you money, they might save your bacon, because bad data gets worse the longer it stays in your system. And then the more losses you can accumulate. And there's all sorts of other associated problems. Melissa eliminates waste from incorrect mailings. Melissa improves customer satisfaction with seamless real-time identity verification tools. They may help you with compliance. There are a lot of businesses where know your customer is a requirement. And if you've got duplicates in your database, that's just going to waste so much money. Melissa's matching and dedupe tools help establish a, I wish I could do this on my personal address book, actually, a single high-quality record listing all customer touch points for a customer. So you get a complete 360-degree view of each customer. It helps you serve them better, market to them better. Melissa complies with USPS's move update requirements, assures the most current address data because they're processing through the USPS's own national change of address database. Melissa, you know what? They've been doing it since 1985. No wonder they're experts in global intelligence solutions to help organizations unlock accurate data for a more compelling customer view. And by the way, you should be reassured your data is absolutely safe with Melissa. They undergo continuous independent security audits to reinforce their commitment and to reassure their customers that they are committed to data security, privacy, and compliance requirements. And as a result, they're SOC 2 compliant. They're HIPAA compliant. They're GDPR compliant. Your data is absolutely in the best hands. I'm seeing on the website, for those of you watching the video, there's some great case studies on the Melissa site. Go to melissa.com/twit. If you're at all interested in how you might be able to use it, look what some other best practices are. Make sure your customer contact data is up to date. Get started today. You get 1,000 records clean for free. Good way to test it at melissa.com/twit. melissa.com/twit. We thank Melissa so much for supporting Mac Break Weekly, melissa.com/twit. Okay, Mr. Micah Sargent, do you have a pick of the week for us?
I do. And let me get that link popped into the show notes. The app that I want to talk about, it's available on the iPad and the iPhone, but you can install it on the Mac, and I have it on the Mac. It's called Knott's 3D. Knott's 3D.
Like Knott's Berry Farm?
Like K-N-O-T-S, like you're tying knots. And that's because it is an app.
Oh, I love, I know you, this app. I love this app.
Yeah, it teaches you it how teaches to tie knots. So you get to learn in this beautiful animation how to tie all sorts of knots. It's just kind of fun learning about all the knots that are out there. They have them categorized quite well, and you can slow things down. They're all 3D, so you can sort of spin them around and look at them. And I wanted to mention this one because I can imagine in the Vision Pro future where I could take this knot and pull it out.
This would be able to look around it. Now I'm going to buy one.
Oh, now you're getting one.
Now I'm going to buy one. I never thought of that.
You got to learn how to tie all the
knots. Oh my God. You hold the string up in front of you.
Yeah. Yes.
And then you can see and you can go,
now I'm doing a bunt line hitch.
Everybody should know how to do a bunt line hitch. One of the most important.
And the only way I can learn is by having a Vision Pro to do it with, obviously.
OMG.
Yeah, and then I forgot to mention, they also will link to videos if you want to see sort of hands do the action.
This is the next best thing to having a sailor in your apartment.
And I don't have one of those, so okay. I had to do what I had, right?
Come here, kid. Let me show you how to make a clover hitch.
And then as a secondary little thing, I did want to give a super quick shout out. There was a nice individual who was golf carting a couple of us, and I was talking to Dan Morin, and the person who was driving us said, do I know your voice from somewhere? And I said, me? I said, yeah. I said, Mike. And they said, Micah Sargent. And they are a weekly listener to MacBreak Weekly.
You got
to
wear a hat or something. It says, I am
Micah Sargent.
Yeah.
And a weekly listener, MacBreak Weekly, iOS Today, several Twitch shows.
Is this different from the other one?
This is different from the other one.
There was two?
So one recognized me by the look, but the other person, just my voice. And I thought that was kind of neat. So thank you for listening.
Yay.
Thank you for tuning in every week.
Thanks to all our listeners.
And thank you, Knott's 3D, for helping me tie loads of different knots.
And I apologize to all my friends who work at Apple. They've always been pissed off at me.
Oh,
but I don't. Andy, I know you guys, you do great work. You work really hard. I know. Andy Inako, your pick of the week.
Mine is something that we've talked about before. Other people have picked it as the pick of the week. However, this time I have now got access to the Arc browser for Mac OS, the new beta. And I'm going to add my own testimony to this. This is a really, really great browser. Other people have recommended it. What I love about it is that it's the first browser that really tries to reconceptualize how a web browser should work in 2023, 2022. Instead of having, hey, here's a window with an address bar and some bookmarks, the rest of it, it's up to you to organize it and to figure out how to use this and make the best productivity out of it. The way that I've got the Arc browser set up for myself is that I basically have decided to use it as, it's actually dark right now, but when I'm using my MacBook or my desktop Mac, my external display here is my iPad Pro, and I have the Arc browser maximized in this display, and I use it basically for everything that I use kind of like as a web app. So when I need to get my mail, I've got icons for mail, for YouTube, for Spotify, for Slack, all like in little icons, row of icons in the sidebar. And it also lets you set up like workspaces for when I'm doing all of my research and stuff to figure out all the stuff I'm doing for this podcast, all the stuff I'm doing for NPR, all the stuff I'm doing for the Material podcast, all the stuff I'm doing for one different project. They're all in like individual like spaces with that are nicely lined up in the sidebar there. The only thing I complain I have about it is simply that I like it too much, and I absolutely need my web browser to be cross-platform. I need to have it on my Mac, on my iPad, on my Android phone, and also my Chromebook. So if I get too attached to this, if I get too productive with it, I might be stuck with using this for everything, and I'm not sure if I want that. But it's free. Go to arc.net to sign up for the beta and start using it, because, oh my goodness, it is exactly everything that Safari should steal everything from this. Chrome should steal everything from this. We have been neglected as web users, and finally, Arc is giving us some love.
From the Browser Company of New York, arc.net. I think do you still have to get an invite to use it?
You still need an invite. It's still in beta, but it's a very, very stable beta.
And it's Mac only, although the Windows versions, and I believe an iOS version are imminent.
Oh yeah, the Arc, yeah, Arc on iOS is a whole. They actually kind of make it as a separate sort of idea where it's just almost a list of links as opposed to a full on.
Yeah, browser. It's really interesting. I played with it.
It does sync between.
Oh, Mac, it does. So,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, very cool. It's based on Chromium though, isn't it?
I believe it's a Chromium
engine. Based. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's really it's about new thinking about UI in your browser.
Absolutely.
Arc.net. Mr. Alex Lindsay, your pick of the week. And you can't say Vision Pro.
I could say the Vision Pro. I don't have it yet.
Oh, okay.
Quick note, this isn't necessarily my pick, but a quick note that for us Mac users for a long time, and for those of you playing PlayStation, there was an app that a lot of us played in the 90s called Marathon.
Oh, God, and, yes, yes.
You see the trailer? Did you see the trailer?
No, is it a new version of Marathon?
Bungie is
releasing it from Bungie? A
new version.
Yeah. What?
Oh, yeah. There's a new trailer. That's why I wanted to bring it up, because the trailer was released 2 weeks ago, and in my world, like, everybody talks about the trailer, but I realized I think not everybody has seen that Marathon is coming.
So back. Marathon, Bungie went on to do Halo, and so Marathon was in effect the granddaddy of Halo. But
Marathon was like, you had Doom on the, you know, but then you had Marathon, and Marathon is what we all played on the Mac.
First person
and
shooter for the Mac. We actually used to play like crazy.
95.
Yeah, on the site. Yeah.
You had to.
Wait a minute. This is the game?
Caterpillar?
Boy, yeah, it looks a lot better than it used to.
The launch. Oh, yeah. This is the new one. It's a brand new one. It's built up. But the, we used to have to get enough frame rate to play on a 7100, I think it was. You had to restart without all the extensions.
Right.
And so at the end of the day, I worked in a game company. And so I was an art director in a game company. We were all in one room, a tiny little game company, five of us or whatever. And you would hear one person about 5 or 6 o'clock, somewhere between 5 and 6, you hear this, dong. And that means they're restarting with their extensions off. And suddenly, no one would say anything. It was like, dong. And then suddenly, wait. I'm compiling. And they're like, dong, dong, dong. And everyone would go in and we'd play. And it would always be like, and now if one of your wives called, the key was that no one was allowed to fire because the speakers were open. And it would always be someone was going, no, I'm just finishing up. I'm just finishing up here. And someone would fire their gun. And then suddenly, no, I'm not playing marathon. I'm not, you know. And this is not,
by the way, as I watch it, doesn't look a lot like the old marathon.
No, but it's just they're going to re-release it, though. It's going to be, I think they're going to take what they learned on Halo and then apply it. So marathon, we get marathon back, and it's just going to be, anyway, for some of us, we played it a lot.
Karsten Bondi told me anyway. Only recently we all played marathon like crazy on the site when we were all doing the MSNBC show. This is like you in the mid 90s, 94. And we do the same thing would happen. They'd all play because it was a networked game. Mm-hmm. It was one of the early network games.
Yeah.
And Karsten told me that behind the scenes, they were saying, gang up on Leo.
Yeah.
And every time I joined the game, 15 rocket launchers would all at once would fire up at me.
Oh, man.
Fire
me. Yeah.
So it turned out anyway, that I was the bad guy. What do they call it among us? I was the intruder.
Oh, yeah. What is that?
Imposter.
Imposter.
And they was like, get him.
Sus.
The difference was they all knew I was the imposter. But that's not your pick. What's your pick?
That's not my pick. Pick is coming. I think it was released on Friday, but it's called Zoom Cuts. And this is new from Liminal. This is the company that, of course, makes Zoom ISO and Zoom OSC. And what this is taking a lot, not all, but a lot of what we have in Zoom ISO, OSC and Zoom ISO. These are, you know, those are what Zoom OSC does. Wait a minute.
So Andy Carluccio
sold
Liminal or just sold...
Sold Liminal.
So
this is part of Zoom.
It's Zoom extensions from Zoom.
But Zoom is, you know, Liminal's keeping its own company, you know, so it's separate from Zoom.
Oh, it is. I mean, okay.
It's like LinkedIn didn't become Microsoft either. You know, like so it's so Zoom.
I get it.
So Liminal is a subsidiary of Zoom. And they keep on, you know, they're developing.
Well, we love Andy. You introduced him to us. We think he's so great. And we use Zoom ISO right now. We're using Zoom ISO. Yeah.
And you're using it now for I heard you were using some Zoom stuff for the calls over the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. Andy wrote us a great script and it's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a Zoom phone number now. Yeah.
What Zoom Cuts does is it allows you to take a lot of the tools that we have in Zoom ISO and Zoom OSC that are a little geeky. I mean, they tie into a lot of other things and have it just with shortcuts. So now you can, you know, there's a lot of like things that you might want to do in Zoom. Now there's all these short, and it's just a short, you know, these are shortcuts, you know, so now you can use them as shortcuts. Adam Tao, who also has written another program that I talk about, which is, my brain just turned off here, but Adam, is at Zoom as well. And it is, and he has, written a lot. He's really into shortcuts. so he built this all out. But what this allows you to do, if you're running Zoom events, this allows you to go in and allows you to do a lot of the tools like mute everybody, unmute everybody, you know, get information, do all these other things. And if you have other programs that do shortcuts, you are able to integrate those. So you can say, I want you to cut to this and play this. So you can talk to another app that is doing shortcuts as well. So you can build very complex shortcuts because of shortcuts can do that on its own. But these give you all the hooks that we had with Zoom OSC and Zoom ISO to do those controls. You have those here. And it's, you know, for a lot of people, like my wife friends, the stuff we do at office hours is pretty complicated. And it still needs OSC. But the stuff that my wife does, where she's running Zoom events in the native Zoom environment, this is a really powerful set of tools that folks like her are going to use a lot. So.
Zoom Cuts. Do you think that was, John, a beta of Zoom Cuts that Andy was using to automate our workflow for the Ask the Tech Guys?
No.
Ah, okay.
Oh, Zoom Isadora, Cuts. Yeah,
Isadora, yeah.
We've talked about that in the past.
Yeah. Liminal.net. Liminalette.com. That's a, yeah, and the company's Liminal, but the website is liminalplus.et.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's the other one that Adam writes is Mixabec Pro, which is something that I've already recommended that in the past. And it's the, you can't use you can't use a Blackmagic ATEM without Mixabec Pro. So it's, so he's really tied. Well, and again, because of that, you can tie controls because you have the same person that wrote both of these. You can tie the controls from the ATEM into the Zoom to tie all those things together as well.
Nice.
So it's a pretty nifty setup. And we're going to be talking to both Adam and Andy are going to join Office Hours on Thursday to answer people's questions about this. And
OfficeHours.global. That's where Mr. Lindsay hangs his hat most of the time. And of course, if you want to hire him, 090.media. I will give you a plug. I will mention, though, because Out of Sync put this in our IRC, that you can still play Marathon. There's an open source version of Marathon, the original called Aleph One. It has Marathon, Marathon 2, and Marathon Infinity. It works on Mac OS X, Windows, and Linux, and you can play online. So
I don't have a big sense of humor, though. I did jump on there one time, and I think we talked about it on Mac Break years and years ago, that, hey, I'm going to go play, and you can all go. And suddenly, like, 200 people showed up. And these are folks that have their own little, like, setup that they're doing this with. And suddenly, it was mass chaos.
Interesting.
They didn't think we were funny either. They weren't excited that a lot of people showed up. They were mostly angry that everyone's messing everything up for them. So it was,
Google Aleph One and Marathon if you want to. Try playing it. 090.media for his day job. OfficeHours.global for his love job.
We were down at Cinegear over the weekend. Cinegear is the coolest film. Like, there's NAB, which is big, and IBC is big, but Cinegear is all eye candy. It's jibs and cameras and lights and everything else. And we were streaming. We streamed.
Ooh, look at that.
Four hours live. With a live view and a bunch of, crazy gear from Electrosonics and Teradek and stuff like that. So it was a lot of fun. So anyway, so we did that and we had, today we had Kelsey Gray on. She writes this book actually, Let's Make Letters. And, it was all about topography. And so we covered a lot of ground in the last 5 days.
Always fantastic. And there was a great, coverage of the keynote. You can always watch their stream if you don't want to watch ours.
Well, it's different. Ours is very, yours is much more, you can listen to it. Ours is like, there's a whole bunch of people. There's 100 people in our Zoom room all like arguing with each other over whether this matters or not. So this is slightly different. It's a lot more interactive. It's not the typical Office Hours. There's about 100.
It's the office free for all, really.
It is. We're all just watching the show and talking about it. It was fun.
Andy, when are you going to be on GBH next?
This Friday at 12:30, I'm actually at the Boston Public Library studio. So come on down and have a cup of coffee, have a cookie, have a sandwich, and watch the pictures as they float through the air. Or if you don't want to go to the Boston Public Library, go to wgbhnews.org to stream the audio live, or later go to wgbhnews on YouTube to watch the video.
Very nice, Andrew. My favorite AI.
Thank you very much.
Micah Sargent is a regular on Tech News Weekly. He'll be back on Thursday to talk about the week's news with Jason Howell. Of course, every Tuesday morning right before Mac Break Weekly, you do iOS Today with Rosemary Orchard. That's a great show. And then on Sundays, you and I do Ask the Tech Guys.
That we do, Ask the Tech Guys, where we take your questions live on air and do our best to answer them, unless it's about printers. No, even then we try.
We did a printer question. It was the last question of the day, and I will never let that happen again. We should also... Producer John Ashley says I wouldn't be sure. You also do a podcast, a wonderful podcast.
That's Relay.fm/clockwise.
Only half an hour.
Yes, never longer than 30 minutes is Clockwise, the tech podcast, where we have two guests on every week. Each person brings a topic to the table. We go around the table answering each topic.
And you did it yesterday at the podcast studio.
Yes, Dan was able to arrange some time for us to be in the Apple Podcast podcast's studio for a brief 30 minutes, and then they quite literally broomed us out the door.
Wow.
But we were there long enough to get to do an episode with Mike Hurley and Jason Snell. Jason Snell is obviously for this. So yeah, that was a good time to get to chat with the folks.
Aptly titled, I want to be able to ducking type. Relay.fm/clockwise. Well, we have approved, I think, today, Alex's premise that all of these should be pre-recorded because we have now gone longer by an hour.
Oh my gosh.
We've gone longer by an hour than the Apple event, and we didn't even cover all the stuff they covered. So you're right, Alex. I give you a victory, instant victory. Well, 3 hour later victory. We could have been a little more terse.
I am sure.
What are just so conversational?
3 hours.
Goes by like that.
Yeah, I do, can't believe it's been three.
Unless you're listening, in which case you're going.
It's a cuddle puddle of tech love.
They're doing 2x speed, so they're fine.
That's right. It's only an hour and a half for most of them. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. The live stream is alive.twit.tv. There's audio and video there. That's only if you want to watch us as we do it, get the full flavor of it. If you're doing that, you should chat with us. There's two ways to do that. Open to all, irc.twit.tv. Club Twit members, of course, can go in the clubhouse and chat with us there. If you're not a member of Club Twit, $7 a month gets you ad-free versions of all our shows, access to the Discord, which is a really great social network, plus special shows like Micah's Hands-On Macintosh that we don't put out in public. I think it's a good $7 a month. That's a well-spent $7 a month. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit. If you are not a member, then you can go to the public feeds for this show after the fact. Either go to the website, twit.tv/mbw, to get the ad-supported version of the show, or the YouTube channel dedicated to Mac Break Weekly. There's a link at twit.tv/mbw. Or, and I think this is the best thing, subscribe. In fact, I really want to encourage everybody who listens to any of our shows to open up your favorite podcast player, whether it's Pocket Casts or Overcast or Apple or Google's podcast player. Open it up, search for Twit, and you'll find all the shows there and can subscribe to the ones you want to listen to. The nice thing about that is if you subscribe, you don't have to think about it at all. Just whenever you're in the mood, you'll have a show to listen to. Thank you for being here. But now I must say it is time to go back to work because break time is over.
Hey, I'm Rod Pyle, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and each week I join with my co-host to bring you This Week in Space, the latest and greatest news from the final frontier. We talk to NASA chiefs, space scientists, engineers, educators, and artists, and sometimes we just shoot the breeze over what's hot and what's not in space books and TV. And we do it all for you, our fellow true believers. So whether you're an armchair adventurer or waiting for your turn to grab a slot in Elon's Mars rocket, join us on This Week in Space and be part of the greatest adventure of all time.